have this committee come to order. Okay, I want to tell you how I'm going to do this. I've got 17 bills on this agenda. I'm going to try and get through them as fast as I can. It's called fly or die. I made little notes in the edge of my paper that said you got 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You have to guess which one you got, see? If you're down for 5 minutes and you go 15, we won't have time to do the work session. I'm serious. I want to get through this. I don't want to spend all day thinking. If we were doing due deliberation, we'd be allowed to have another 3 weeks to work bills around here. Apparently, that isn't the system we're using. The first one that I wanted to do is the work session on a lottery bill. I'd like to open a work session on 498. And let me just set a context for this. I've done a lot of talking with a lot of people around the building and elsewhere. People that have worked with this a lot more than myself, you know who the players are. Given that there's been a lot of tension back and forth, we are proceeding with a vote on lottery, the dash two amendments.
One changes it to 20.
Oh, the dash one amendment that we now have. Well, I guess I could have Judith explain it for a minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 498 limits compensation of video lottery game retailers to 15% of net receipts. The dash one amendments limit that compensation to 20% of net receipts. We have received a no fiscal impact, and we don't have the estimate on the revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It looks like we had to redo both the dash ones and dash twos. And we redid them in such a way. Sounds like that door is locked over there for some reason. We had to redo the dash ones. Eric Carlson, I'm going to ask you to come up and explain why we had to do the redo the dash one and dash two amendments while Vicky's getting a glass of water. Senator Walker, excuse me. I'm sorry to pick on you like that. I'm looking at dash three and dash four amendments in my packet, and that doesn't make sense to me. It's a redo of dash ones and dash twos.
Yes, Eric Carlson, Senate Majority Office. The dash threes and dash fours, which I don't have in front of me, but
here,
working from memory.
Sure. Let me give you copies of both.
The purpose of this is to make sure that the percentages that you're looking at here apply only to video line games, video slots. And not, so if you decide to adopt, for example, dash 3 and go with 20% commissions, that commission would apply to video line games only. It would not apply to other games run by the lottery.
Okay.
And the commissions that have been previously determined for those other games would continue to be in effect.
And the dash, Mr. Chair, and the dash 4 is...
The dash 4 is just 18% instead of 20%. It's just two options.
We had done 18 and 20% with dash 1 and dash 2.
We didn't either.
Mr. Chair, so I understand that dash 3 and the dash 4 apply only to the video line game spots.
Right.
No other lottery
right.
method.
Right.
Okay. And the only difference is one's 18% and one is 20%.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
And in an ideal world, there's a lot of us that would say we'd rather do 18% or 15% or whatever, and conversations and conversations and conversations and conversations have resulted in doing a thing that's blended. If you do the dash fours, you end up with a blended 21.3 because it takes the video poker, which is up at 28.8 or whatever, blend it with
the
20. Is it dash threes? Okay, excuse me.
I left my old files.
I'm going to let Senator Walker get her bill filed. Okay. Bottom line.
Okay.
I'm going to outline this one more time. We did dash ones and dash twos originally, not realizing that those would have covered the entire spectrum of a video poker line game routine. So we redrafted them with three and four to replace ones and twos,
okay,
to make it clear that you have the 18 or the 20% that just affect the line game part. That's the way we put it in. Okay, and the dash
threes have the 20%.
Have the 20%. And you now have a copy.
And everyone, copies are being made right now.
And somehow we didn't get the copies at our desk. I can understand that, given the craziness of where we are. I'm going to hand Senator Starr my copy. So he has...
And then, Mr. Chair, we have a letter here from Senator Starr.
Right.
Would you like me to address the contents of the letter, Mr. Chair?
Do you want to share your concern in the letter?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for the rest of the committee, I asked Legislative Council to comment on the constitutionality of Senate Bill 498 and really the legislature's ability to pass this bill to regulate the lottery. And clearly the statement, and I will read from the letter from Legislative Council: any action by the Legislative Assembly that unduly burdens or restricts the power of the Commission to establish and operate the state lottery is subject to constitutional challenge. If the Legislative Assembly wants to have the ability to tell the Commission how to run the lottery, whether by limiting the types of games it can offer or the amount of commission it may pay to video lottery game retailers, the Legislative Assembly will need to refer a constitutional amendment to the people for their approval. So I just wanted to have that on the record in this committee to be aware that I believe that, and Legislative Council believes, that this this bill has a constitutional problem.
We understand that. Of course, we could have gotten a few other legal eagles in here and had a few other pages of stuff to stick in our packets that would have said something else. Other discussion. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I'm really pleased to see this response back.
I'm sure you are.
Legislative Council. Because, I mean, a simple reading, as I articulated it in the committee last time, a simple reading of the Constitution makes it really clear that we don't have that authority.
Yeah, and that's why we've debated this the last 5 or 6 years in this building.
Well, and I've been raising that same issue all the whole
that's
time.
That's fine.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome to raise the issue. Is there any other discussion? What I would like is to have... I can just move the dash three amendments. If that's is there any objection? I guess we need to do a roll call on this.
Someone to move this for you. Okay.
Do you want to do it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's a bold move, and I appreciate the chair's boldness. I would move the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 498.
Senator Walker moves the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 498. We've already had some discussion. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I will state for the record that this is a significant improvement because reading the bill, I assumed that that this would apply to all games and not just this limited amount.
Right.
So it is an improvement.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator. Is there, well, obviously, we need to do a roll call on both of these, so let's do a roll call on the dash three amendment.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Starr?
No.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. The dash three amendments being approved, I'm going to ask now for a motion on Senate Bill 498 as amended.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 498 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 498 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Well,
yes.
Mr. Chair, I think the Lottery Commission has had an opportunity to do what it needed to do, and it hasn't. There's a question about whether we have the ability to tell them what to do. But there's a great deal of public opinion that retailers are given far too much of a percentage of the profits. When the governor went to line games, which he did that on his own accord without any express authority from anyone in the state, I didn't want to go there, but he went there. That contract should have been negotiated before it was agreed to, and it wasn't, and now we're in this mess, and it's a big mess. And this is one way of just getting that mess resolved, Mr. Chair. So
there's a lot of ways of looking at this issue. It could have been dealt with a lot of different ways. We could have done things differently. We could have had a lottery commission. We all know this, that would have been a full lottery commission and could have probably helped out without it ending up here in front of us. I do want to remind people that there's significant amounts of money. Some people argue that as much as $40 million more could end up in coffers for K through 12 education and other needs. I consider it, as I've said all along, this whole video poker, line game stuff, I consider it all a moral swamp. And I said that last week, and I'll continue to say that, but if you're going to be stuck in the swamp, you might as well get out of it what you can.
You know, Mr. Chair, I missed that quote, and I love it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, would you like for me to give you your exact quote?
Yeah.
There is no high road in this swamp.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and unfortunately, Mr. Chair, when the lottery constitutional amendment was passed, it wasn't very clear, because I have raised questions as to whether the governor has the right to direct slots for cops instead of slots for tots, if you want to be get in the vernacular of the whole thing, because the amendment said it could be the money was to go to education and economic development. Well, economic development, Mr. Chair, is very broadly defined in the Constitution, and that's one of the problems that we have when we refer these amendments out without having an opportunity to vet what they mean with legislative counsel. So with my soapbox being opened and vetted, I will close my mouth and vote on this bill.
Thank you. I do want to say something. Out in my part of the country, there's a county park, and it's named Glen Otto Park, named for Senator Glen Otto, an old friend. He's deceased, of course, but I think, if I have my history right, he was one of the final votes, if not the final vote, to come across to send us in this direction. I wonder if he looked at the mess that we are in today, if he would ever make this vote. I wonder if he knew how addicted we would become to the money. And we're addicted. I mean, we are addicts. And because we, the legislature, are addicted, we can't look at the moral issues very well, I don't think, because it's a matter of educating a kid or potentially creating another video poker or line game addict. What a Hobson's choice that is. It's sad all the way around, and I don't think anybody will argue with that. So with that, I'm going to quit talking. Does anybody else want to comment? Yes, Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, a question to the chair. My understanding is that the commission is about to rule on this very imminently. Do we have any knowledge of that other than the...
Yes, I've been in quite a bit of conversation with Dale Penn and with the governor's office around what we're doing here and what they're doing there and so on.
Are we talking about days?
It's hard to tell, but potentially a few days. Potentially it could be a little longer. It's hard to tell.
Thank you.
With that, we've had the motion. We've had the discussion. Would you call the roll on Senate Bill 498 as amended?
Senator Stewart?
No.
Senator Stewart?
No.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Aye. Senator, yes.
I'd like to serve notice of a possible minority report.
Okay. With that, Senate Bill 498 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'll carry it. Okay. I'm going to close the hearing, the work session on Senate Bill 498 and open a work session on Senate Bill 150. Judith? Guess what? We only took the 15 minutes that we said we would take on the first one. I hope we stay on schedule with every one of them the rest of the afternoon. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 150 prohibits employers from entering into public works contracts for which a contract price exceeds $250,000 unless the employer has an approved apprenticeship training agent. It requires specification contracts for public works for which contract price exceeds $250,000 to require contractors to be approved as training agents. You have before you the dash two amendments, which you do have a hand engrossed version to help you easily follow along on the dash twos. The dash two amendments do the following: increases the contract price threshold from $250,000 to $350,000.
Okay.
It exempts the employer from the requirement to become an approved training agent or to start a new local joint committee if none exist in the state for occupations used by that employer. It allows the state director of apprenticeship and training to extend the jurisdiction of a local joint committee in an adjoining county, subject to ratification by the council. It requires a contractor to be approved as a training agent by a local joint committee unless, again, none exist in the state for occupations used by the contractor. It directs the Bureau of Labor and Industries Commissioner to appoint a work group to evaluate whether subcontractors should be subject to the same provisions. It specifies work group membership and requires a report no later than January 2nd, 2008. We have a no revenue impact on the measure. This is one that we don't have a fiscal yet on, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I've had one person ask to come up and talk, and I'll give you 30 seconds, Lori, to come up and talk on this bill. You don't know what the time limit is, so you have to talk fast.
Chair Shields and members of the committee, Lori Satinsville, the Oregon Community College Association. We represent 17 of the Oregon's community colleges and 330,000 Oregonians. Initially, we had some concerns about the bill and how that impacts our local rural community colleges, the threshold being 250 and moved to 350,000. While we support apprenticeship and training programs, we're worried about the impact on the local communities. We've been talking with Boley about this, and I thought they were going to come up and maybe share some more. Our understanding is that we aren't going to be impacted because of some of the amendments, which, frankly, I can't tell you I understand totally.
Okay.
And we haven't had a chance to study the impact further.
As I understand it, these agreements were worked out. Jessica is here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dan is here. Why don't you flank Lori for a minute, and let's just make some things clearly as quickly as possible.
Fair enough, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Senate Bill 150 actually addressed the workforce shortage throughout the state. We have an aging workforce in the construction industry. Actually, there is a study by the Employment Department. Art Ayers, what the Employment Department is here, if you wish to hear about some of that information. This bill would only require that on contracts with the dash two amendments over $350,000, that the prime or general contractor be registered as a training agent. We have made a commitment to the League of Oregon Cities that on the House side we would add the definition of what a training agent is, which we also have in definition, and they are fine with that amendment. upper, that be added on the House side. We've talked with the Community Colleges Association, those in small communities where, in fact, there is not a training program. We can expand the boundary to add in additional county and work that out with them. This bill only requires that you be a training agent if you're a prime contractor and if the contract is over $350,000, and it does not require that you access the apprenticeship and training program or use apprentices. Most people that would be registered training agent would in fact go ahead and use the reduced training use the reduced services of apprentices within that contract, though. We have worked out amendments with AGC.
Jessica?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with AGC. We worked long and hard on these amendments to come to an agreement with Boley and are comfortable with the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, I'd just like to thank the League of Oregon Cities and the Community Colleges and AGC for working with us on this bill.
And Lori, stomp back sometime and tell me how it looks once you have time to figure it out, because it does go to the House and there's still input possible.
Chair Shields, thank you.
Okay. Questions?
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
A question I have is, where are the Associated Builders and Contractors on this bill, and where are the cities and counties?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, as we just testified, we worked out with Jessica with the Associated General Contractors, worked with them to have the Dash 2 amendments, which they're in agreement with. The League of Oregon Cities, we had worked out a definition for training agent to be added on the House side so that they are fine with it, is my understanding.
Mr. Chair, my question not was with AGC. I understand AGC's position. My question is with ABC, the Associated Builders and Contractors. There's a different contracting association. I don't see Sean Miller in the room.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where ABC is on this bill. I'm more than happy to go try and find him in the hall.
I just made a quick loop. I didn't see him. I'd be curious to know, we have a representative from the counties here. I'd be interested if we could hear directly from them.
Could you identify yourself?
Certainly. I'm John O'Shell, County Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. The issue I am trying to get resolved is simply, is a small contractor going to be capable of becoming a training agent? We support the need for training. We support for needing it. My concern is, if you have a small contractor out there, does he have the resources to do what is needed? And for the counties, specifically speaking for the small counties and small agencies, we have a lot of smaller contracts that will still be over even the $350,000 threshold. If I lose my small local contractors, we have a pretty adverse impact. And so that is our concern, trying desperately to find a clear answer. We've just gotten a short explanation. And if they have to be able to have someone big enough that they have someone to do the training as well as the apprentice there, some of these small firms might have troubles. That is what I'm trying to resolve. That is what, at this point, I have not resolved. Until I can get that resolved, I'm very uncomfortable.
Mr. Chair, Dan Gardner again, for the record. Actually, there is no requirement that they actually train apprentices. It's that they become a registered training agent. There's over 147 different joint apprenticeship and training councils in 47 different professions across the state. There is an ability here for every single contractor to be able to sign up to be a training agent, and that is no cost involved in them doing so. To just sign up, there will be costs when they're accessed as apprentices, but this would not eliminate any small contractor from their ability to do contracts.
If that is the case, then we have no objection.
Okay. Well, it's on the record. It better be the case.
Right.
Any other questions? We are in work session. There are no amendments.
150
Dash 2s, yeah, that's right. Dash 2s.
Mr. Chair, there was also, I wanted to note, there's a letter from the Oregon Tradeswomen, Inc., who support this bill.
I like that.
I like that a lot.
Everybody got their Tradeswomen letter? Very good. Mm-hmm. Can I have a motion on the Dash 2s?
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to adopt dash two amendments to Senate Bill 150.
Senator Walker moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 150. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to support the motion to amend the bill, and I'm going to support moving the bill to the floor, but I'm going to hold out the caveat that I may change my vote on the floor. But I appreciate the commissioner working with AGC. There's a broader contractor community out there than just
right.
AGC, and so I want to have some further discussions about what this means to small contractors. I'd like to further look at the issues Mr. O'Shell brought forward. I made a quick run through the hall. I talked to one member of the lobby that represents small cities, and they raised some issues. So
okay.
I did tell Commissioner Gardner that I would support the bill coming out of committee. I will uphold that commitment. Mm-hmm. But
And I'm going to ask Dan in front of the world here, try and resolve some of this with Senator Starr before it gets to the floor of the Senate, please. I'd be interested in some feedback on that myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion? So we have moved dash two amendments. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Yes.
I had my hand up.
Oh, you did have your hand up. Sorry. I didn't see you. My apologies.
You want me to articulate the objection?
Sure.
We don't have clarity, and we've moved a bunch of bills this year without having absolute clarity to know what we're doing. And so with that, I know you guys are going to pass this thing. But I really do believe we need to know more to make sure that every one of these things are taken.
I perfectly understand. Thank you. I appreciate that. And hopefully, by the time it gets to the floor, Senator or Commissioner Gardner will talk with you or somebody from his office. I want that same clarity. With that, I guess I'll do a roll call on the...
Do I need to make a motion, Mr. Chair?
I thought we already did a motion on the dash twos. Didn't we do the motion?
We approved them, and then you hammered down, and then there was a further comment.
You caught his objection, so...
I caught his objection, so okay. But
the dash twos.
Do we need a revote on dash twos? Is that what you're saying?
No, we could just mark George as a no.
Okay, George was a no then. Senator George is a no on the dash two. They are adopted. I'd like a motion on the bill as amended.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 150 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 150 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would the clerk call the roll?
Senator George?
No.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Frazier?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. Senate Bill 150 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Since Senator Walker's running out of the room, I'll let her carry the bill. That's what you get when you leave. But she's got to go testify in another bill in another hearing. Hurry back.
All right.
I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 638. Judith, real quickly.
Public hearing, right.
Public hearing.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 638 removes the authority to restore state employees terminated or removed from an exempt, unclassified, or management service position held before an appointment. It does not allow the authority to restore them to a previous exempt, unclassified, or management service position. We have no amendments that I'm aware of at this point in time on 638. We have a no revenue impact and no word from fiscal on 638. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I have one person that signed up.
Senator Deckard.
I know. Senator Deckard is here, and Susan Wilson from the Department of Administrative Services, Human Resource Services. Okay. Just wanted to hear a few words from you folks. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ryan Deckard, Senate District 14, Beaverton, Alloa, Southwest Portland, and we'll be very brief. Senate Bill 638 is pretty simple, straightforward, and it's one of those policies in state government, when you come across it, you think, this makes no sense at all. The policy is pretty simple. It just says that we have today, then this bill takes care of that policy by saying that we ought not have a policy that when an agency doesn't want a manager, they can simply transfer that manager to another agency that has no need and no use for that individual and has to absorb them. And we know of cases, and I think DAS will come after us and maybe oppose the bill, but I would only encourage this committee to ask the questions that y'all have asked me, which is, why do we have this policy, and why would we have all of these managers or too many managers out there that are doing jobs where there was no need for that person to do the job and no real work that receiving agency actually had in line for the individual. And so it's one of those policies that sometimes is unique to government entities. It does not make sense. And this bill does one thing. It removes the policy from the books and allows our agencies to actually retain the people that they want and not be forced to retain people and find work for people that they don't want. With that, I really hope the committee goes into work session and actually passes this bill, because I think it's just one good government bill that that we could simply pass.
So let me articulate it in my own crude sort of way. We've got shortages all throughout state government. We don't have enough money to do things, and we've got agencies that'll have management personnel that they don't want, that they'll move to someplace else, and there's nothing we seem to be able to do about it, and therefore we end up paying people to do nothing. Excuse me, that's crude, but Senator
George, I could have said that better.
You couldn't have said it better? That may be true, but I could have said it better. No, I'm teasing. That's the crude, blunt.
There's a better use for the hundreds of thousand dollars, if not millions of dollars, that is expended on a restoration policy. There are better uses for those funds in the vital services that Oregonians expect.
Testimony?
Yes. Harvey Matthews from Associated Oregon Industries. The business community obviously sees this as a bad business issue that DAS is employing in DAS's statewide policy number 50.030.05. They specifically say an employee shall be restored to the appropriate classification, and if there is no vacant position, they're going to be restored to a fill position. And if a double fill is created, then, well, that's just fine. And that's, if we want to restore credibility with taxpayers, this is a policy that needs to be done away with. This Senate Bill 638 is, thank you, Senator Decker, for bringing this forward. This applies only to an employee that is unable or unwilling to fully and faithfully perform the duties of the position satisfactorily. So we just think that this is a common sense, good bill, and we hope that you go into work session today and pass it out.
Okay, thank you. Is Susan Wilson here? Come on up, Susan. I think Senator Deckert prophetically was saying that DAS is against this bill. Can you give us the reasons?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Wilson. I'm administrator of the Human Resource Services Division in the Department of Administrative Services. We oversee HR policy for state government. I have submitted some written testimony that I think you have. And, Mr. Chair, yes, as was prophesized, DAS does oppose Senate Bill 638. Where we are with this particular bill is the history of the bill. When management service was created in 1981, the right to be restored was put into the bill in a situation where an individual has not been removed for cause. If someone is removed because of misconduct, inefficiency, incompetence, insubordination, indolence, malfeasance, or other unfitness to render effective service, then they do not have restoration rights. If, however, we get in situations where we have executive service employees who are working with executive management, we often have management changes. These are individuals then who may want to bring in their own team. We have management service employees then who have restoration rights that are similar to but not equal to what the union-represented employees have. We believe that this is part of what we are using as a key to build a good management team in state government, because right at the moment we have difficulty getting people to even come into management in state government. If they have no sense of being able to restore, if indeed the job is not what they envisioned, if the work does not meet the skill level, then they have restoration rights back in. In terms of Senator Deckert's concerns about the number of people going back and increasing costs to agencies, agencies are expected to manage their resources and to manage their human resources within the budgets and the positions that they have. If people are restored to an agency, then it's up to the agency to manage that resource, and if they need to make adjustments in other places, that's the case. We have a number of situations. These are not overly commonplace, but we have a number of situations where agencies have absorbed people back into the agencies, has worked successfully, and they are within budget and within their position authority.
Question. You say we've got a number of places where they have been absorbed successfully. Do you know of any situations where you've sent somebody back and they've not been absorbed successfully, i.e., they're maybe not doing any work because there's not much, if anything, for them to do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we encourage agencies who receive an individual back to manage the workload of that agency. If indeed an expectations are set up for an individual when they come back into a position, we generally hear from agencies that there's more work to be done, not less work to be done. We set up expectations. We expect them to hold those individuals to those expectations. If they do not meet the expectations, then they work through the discipline process and the individual would be removed at some point in time, as in any other individual that we have in an agency. We encourage agencies to manage through discipline when that is an appropriate level to take.
Committee, I'd like to ask the witness to recite that long list of reasons that somebody would not be restored that you had in the early...
It's in your written testimony.
All right, but I want you to listen to the words, and I have one comment about them. Go ahead.
Misconduct, inefficiency, incompetence, insubordination, indolence, malfeasance, or other unfitness to render effective service.
Okay, now, every one of those is a subjective concept.
Exactly.
You can't find me objective criteria to measure those. I just want to point that out. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and so is indolence. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem. In practice, it doesn't happen. Excuse me, I should never argue with a witness, because I've heard about people being moved back to where there isn't a job because maybe a manager or maybe somebody in some department doesn't want to point a finger of indolence or
point at her. Cause
not at Judith, that's for sure. God could strike me dead for doing that. I mean, she wouldn't like it at all. You know? Nobody caught that. Anyway, go ahead, Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, we've had a lot of our union folks into the office this year talking about the fact, you know, they're at the delivery level of everything that happens in Oregon government, and they seem to be at the bottom end of this chain in which everybody takes a big slice out of it, and the little bit that's left over goes out to actually provide the services that we claim that we're trying to do. But I had no idea that DASH was, in fact, the representative agency. In other words, without paying dues, an administrator has this kind of protection for their job. I mean, I just find it unconscionable that, in fact, that exists that way. My assumption of DASH, and pardon me for being so naive, is that, in fact, you are the tough group, and I'm not picking on you individually, understand this, but the agency in its entirety, that actually is supposed to be in here representing the interests of the taxpayer and making sure we run an efficient, tight ship here. And I'm a little bit in shock at what we just heard, and not there again, I know you're just reflecting what you're told to say. So
doing your job, which is a good thing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might also just point out this was legislative language that was adopted, and we have had a number of Employment Relations Board court cases that have interpreted that, which support that this is the action we must be taking in these cases.
Thanks.
With that, I'd like to close the hearing.
Mr. Chair, may I just make one comment, and that is that I maybe you don't know about it, but I do, where people have been moved even though they have been found to make serious, serious mistakes. And that's the reason they were moved, but they were not dismissed. And the taxpayers know that too, and they read it in the paper, and it takes away from the credibility of a lot of good people that are here doing their job. And so that's all I need to say, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'd like to, if there's no further discussion, close the work session.
The hearing,
excuse me, on Senate Bill 638. Thank you. Judith is still doing her job, you see, keeping me in line. And open a work session on Senate Bill 638.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'd move Senate Bill 638 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard, can you hang on for 1 second? Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 638 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, would the chair call, the clerk call the roll?
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Shield?
Aye. Senate Bill 638 is approved, moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I wanted to ask Senator Deckard if he would carry the bill. Okay. I didn't want to prematurely ask. We had to vote first. Yeah. So, yeah. Get your armor on and carry the bill. Okay. Now we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 969.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 969 establishes the Oregon Governance Council, specifies membership in that council. It provides that the council shall establish and maintain effective avenues of communication between the governor, the legislative assembly, cities, and counties. It establishes a related account and appropriates money from the account to the council to carry out its duties and functions. No amendments that I'm aware of on Senate Bill 968. We have a no revenue impact, and this measure is going to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think it's 969.
Excuse me, 969, that's right.
Yeah, it feels good. I caught her this time instead of she catching me in an error.
Okay.
We have three people that have signed up. Tim Josie, Linda M.O. Madrell, and David
Barenberg.
Can you all come up? Speak fast, because we'd like to get this bill moving. This sounds like a good idea to me. I don't know if anybody else disagrees. I know the cities and counties want it. It gives them a forum to do some stuff that they need. If I've given you enough testimony, we can just go straight to a work session, but I'll give you a couple minutes to summarize your feelings.
Thank you,
starting
Mr.
with the ever-effervescent Tim Josie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As usual, it's good to see you again, and I mean it from my heart. I'm Tim Josie. I'm the president of the Association of Oregon Counties and Tillamook County Commissioner. When I was on the House floor, there was one bill I remember saying good bill should pass. I'm tempted to say that, but I'll say just a hair more, otherwise you're going to fire me as a president. If you go down to the bottom of the first page of the bill, it says, and this is section 3, sub 4, serve as a forum for collaborative problem solving and exchange of ideas. And that really, in a nutshell, talks about what this is all about. We're in the business, you and I, of providing services to the same constituents. And the red is the shared services. And I trust you've all seen this document before. We're all in the same business of providing the services for our constituents, and this just allows us to sit at the table, especially during the interim, to work out issues. And with that, I will pass on the mic to Linda Madrell, Benton County Commissioner. She's the chair of the Governance Steering Committee.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to see you, Chair. And Senator George happens to be my state senator. I don't know if he'll be back in for the vote or not, but at any rate, the Association of Oregon Counties continues to support a joint state-county process for defining, directing, and funding shared services and interdependent systems. A successful joint process will ensure that the delivery of services to the residents of Oregon is accomplished in the most effective and efficient way possible. Together, we can do much better than we have done in the past, and so the vehicle of this council could really help with that. And as Tim said, this is to establish communication and a process, a forum for a process between the governor, the legislative assembly, and the cities and the counties. There are governance councils in other states. For example, Florida, Iowa, North Dakota, Texas, and Virginia all have these councils. Some of them include a federal partner, but most of them are state and local governments. So we are asking for the establishment of this sort of a council so that we can improve the way that we deliver our services and help you avoid unintended consequences that sometimes occur so that we can serve our shared constituencies much better than we do today.
Thank you. David?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg, Legislative Director for the League of Oregon Cities. I think you've heard eloquent testimony from our county colleagues, and I think you, Mr. Chair, summed it up very well. So I'm going to quote my wife, who says that talk is good, action is better, and urge your action on this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Senator Verger.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. David, I guess I'd better ask you, why in the world do you need this? As President of the League of Oregon Cities, I participated in a group exactly like this. Judge Laura Pryor was there from counties. We had the whole table in the governor's conference room with county people. We had this side of the tables with city people. The governor was there. I don't remember that the president of the Senate or the minority leader, but it was a regular time that we had with the governor. So why do we want another level that's going to cost money to run when we did it for free?
Senator Verger, Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, that it is true that we have good conversations and have been able to meet together, and I think in Oregon we found that the governor's office and legislative leadership has been accessible to local government. The one thing that is missing is that ebbs and flows, and it hasn't been institutionalized, and depending on who the legislative leadership or governor or other folks have been in leadership positions, that there hasn't been full participation. So this would just establish the parties meeting together just to exchange ideas and to try to coordinate our actions. So it works without this, and it would probably work better with it.
Senator Verger, I'd like to just contribute that Judge Pryor has been instrumental in writing up this bill. She is very interested in seeing this in legislation because of the very reason that was stated, that all depending on who's in charge, it ebbs and flows.
Thank you for that comment. Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I appreciate that. On the other hand, what you're saying is you're going to all meet together whether they really want to meet with you or not. They're going to have to meet every 3 months. And I have a little problem with that. I think the way we've done it has just been great, and I do think that they have been very receptive and open to local government. So if that's changed, you ought to find out why that's changed. Commissioner Joshi, you look like you want to say something to me.
A couple of things, Senator. Times are changing. Issues are more complex and getting more complex as time goes by, especially with funding restrictions. And I'd like to voice what the other two said. There are times when this works very well and times when it doesn't work as well as we'd like it to. And I would surmise that maybe you took part in a process when it worked very well. The other thing is that this will not cost the general fund anything. This is going to be funded primarily by LLC and AOC staff, and we will the cost of the general fund, I think, will be the per diem for legislators attending. But if we can schedule these meetings during times when legislature is meeting e-board, for example, when they're already at the Capitol, that really cuts back on cost.
Senator Starr had a question or a comment.
It's maybe more just a comment. I'd echo
Senator Berger's comments on this bill. I don't think it's necessary at all. I just think things, you can't force people to get along, and I wish we could force the governor and the legislature to work well together. I'd love to have a council of legislators and, you know, with the governor's and his staff so that we could nail up and iron out these problems. So I look at this as saying this is ought to be done anyway. You shouldn't need to have a council to do this. Having Senator Verger's experience reinforces my thoughts, my original thoughts as I read the bill. So I'm just left here wondering, you know, you can't force people to work together, and either they're going to work together or they're not. And, you know, you're not going to force the governor to go to a meeting every 3 months if he doesn't want to go. And so...
Well, it doesn't say governor, isn't it? Somebody from his office?
Yeah, but...
Designate.
Yeah.
It's designate. I'd just like to comment, and I want to share this with you. I don't know about your caucus, Senator Starr, but I've been in my caucus through three different governors. And sometimes a governor would gladly show up at a caucus and lots of give and take and conversation. And sometimes another governor doesn't. And that's the kind of ebb and flow, Senator Verger, that I've seen. Just, you know, in the legislative process. I think Commissioner Josie said it very well when he said times are changing. There are hard times, and I'll be honest with you, when there's hard times, limited resources, sometimes people want to run away from the conversation. Senator Verger, you may have been there when there were people of really goodwill that wanted to talk their way through this. I have experienced situations where people would rather just kind of hide behind your doors, you know, and not be there. So I see it as a worthwhile bill. If both of you are dead set against this, I'm not going to have a vote right now, obviously. I'm open for more conversation. Yes, Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I think your point is well taken, at least with me, and that is we are saying that it'll be the governor and the president of the Senate and all the rest of these or their designees. And many times, you know, we all are required to send somebody that's representing our office to a meeting. You get the feedback, but the main thing you're doing is you're having that open dialogue. And what I hear from many of our partners at the local level is that they don't feel that there is this partnership attitude that exists. And you're absolutely right. I think each one of us in this building would just be overjoyed if, in fact, we had the leadership, you know, just drop by once in a while. That doesn't mean, you know, to do our ego, but actually just to communicate. But there's something, you know, I'm thinking back on this from the standpoint of back when we were in kids and in the school, and the teacher would say, you know, why don't you two just sit down and talk about it, and remember, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And those were little things. I mean, they didn't require that. They didn't force you into a room and make you do that. But that set a mindset in place that actually began to have conversation. You realize there was a mechanism to work out a difference. And I just think this sends a great message that we are a team and we're going to try to operate as a team, even if we have to send our designees to do it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just to follow on, I think that we all those conversations should be taking place and ought to be taking place. I think it's a sad commentary that we have to pass a bill.
That's true.
To force people to get into a room and have that conversation. And that's my objection. I don't think that this is necessary. I think that we're all represent, you know, people of the state of Oregon, and you know, representing them at various levels. We ought to work hard with each other and together, but I just don't think you're going to force people to cooperate if they don't want to cooperate.
Yeah, I think that there is also a precedent that is set. I think when people need to get together to discuss things, that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
I am blown away by the fact that this would be needed. LOC is at one end of the hall and AOC is at the other, so they have a good partnership going. If it's something that has to be legislated for you to get involved in this building, then I think that needs to be evaluated by AOC and LOC, not legislated that you all get together every 3 months and have a conversation. I think there are times when you really need to have exactly this group to meet. And I believe when that time comes, that would not be a problem. But that's just, this is the first I've ever heard of the bill.
Is there any further discussion? If not, I'd like to close the hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 696. 969. Now I'm juxtaposing numbers. It's a good thing you're here. Senate Bill 969. Yes. Go ahead.
Were there any amendments?
There's no amendments to the bill.
It's going to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 969 be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a, well,
a do-pass
recommendation. Yes, I would.
Senator Walker moves that we send Senate Bill 969 to the Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Would the clerk call the roll?
Senator Jones?
Yes.
Senator Starr?
No.
Senator Berger?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Hill?
Aye. Senate Bill 969 is moved to the Ways and Means Committee. Now we're going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 660. Is that correct? Senate Bill 660. Make this quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 660 requires a county board or local boundary commission to approve a petition for formation of a special district if the petition meets specified legal requirements. It applies to petitions filed with the board on or after the effective date. We have received a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And these people are organized. I think Burton Weiss is already up here and Roger
Raven.
Go ahead, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Burton Weist. I'm the legislative director for the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Very quickly, Senate Bill 660 amends ORS 198, which is the statute that governs how a county commission evaluates a petition that is submitted to them for the formation of a special district. And these are citizen petitions that are organized by citizen groups or others to form a special district. The chapter has over 20 different requirements that the petition has to meet, and then the county commission is charged with looking at each of those requirements and determining whether they've met all the statutory requirements. The requirements are very broad. They range from very specific things such as the format of the petition itself, all the way up to general things such as is it economically feasible? Does it conflict with other units of government? Is it consistent with the county comprehensive plan? And so it goes from very specific to very general requirements. It is our belief, and we've attached in your testimony a copy of a circuit court recent decision which says the same thing. It's our belief that the statute already says that a county commission is limited to looking at the statutory issues when they evaluate a petition. However, there's some confusion on this because of the language in the statute, and Mr. Raven, who is a city councilor in Harrisburg, will explain what happened to him and his citizen group on this issue. The purpose of this bill, in our view, is not to change the law, unlike the summary of the bill. The purpose, in our view, is to clarify the law to make it clear what the responsibility of the county commission is when they look at this. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask Mr. Raven to tell you his experience, and then I have one last thing to add, if it's okay, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah, we have a couple people from Clackamas County that want to weigh in on the negative side of the bill, so go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Roger Raven. I'm the Harrisburg City Councilor, chair of our Parks Committee, and also the chief petitioner for the formation of Eagle Park and Recreation District. And I'm here to testify about the problems we had with getting this through the Linn County Commissioners. We did everything on a timetable. We did everything we were supposed to do. And when it went before the commissioners, they denied us. We were shocked. We thought this should be a no problem at all. So anyway,
Anyways, we then appealed that. It went to circuit court. Judge Murphy ruled in our favor. It then went back to the county commissioners, and we hammered out a deal as far as a boundary change, which was with the statutes is what their job is if there's a boundary change. And basically, that's in a nutshell what we did. And we were in support of this bill because we'd like to see clarification for the county commissioners, and that is also supported by the judge. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I just conclude. A little bit ago, a few hours ago, Clackamas County suggested an amendment or a change to the bill. It's our belief that the amendment they're suggesting does help the bill. It is even better language than legislative council came up with. I'm aware that the committee doesn't want to deal with amendments and all of that on this bill. So on the record, and I have told Clackamas County that we would support their amendment and make sure it happened on the House side, because we think it makes the bill a better bill.
Okay, thank you. And let's get the folks that are here from. Oh, go ahead.
A quick question.
Sure.
So, just so I understand it's in my head, this what you're proposing to do would be to limit the county's authority to go beyond the statutory those 20 requirements that you mentioned, and determining those petitions to create these special districts. They're statutory. They're limited to those issues in the statutes. They can't do anything else.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, yes, but I would point out to you, one, we believe that's already the law. It's just that the current statute leads to confusion on it. That's why I added the court case so you could see. And secondly, I want you to remember this is the standards for citizens to meet in drafting and putting a petition together. And we think citizens have a right to know what they're supposed to do. What issues are they supposed to address? And the very issue here is should the county commissioner or anyone else be able, after a citizens group, and in their case, work 2 years, crossing all the T's, dotting the I's, they did a survey, get lawyers, they do all the things, and they come, and then they get blindsided. In this case, I just read the hearing data. In this case, it was because a couple of the commissioners didn't think it would pass. Now, how do you deal with that as a citizens commission? You should have the right to know what to expect if you're going to go out and try to create a unit of government. Also, I'd urge you, if there's a concern about the counties having latitude, I'd urge you to look at the requirements. They are very broad. We have no interest, for example, in forcing commissioners to approve a district that's not economic, competes with other districts or cities, or is creating a balkanization of districts. They have all the authority in the world to stop the petition if that's an issue. They have very, very broad authority in the statute. But again, the citizens ought to have a right to know what they're going to be compared to and know what issues they need to address when they come to the hearing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Clarification.
I'd like to get John Mante and Roger Halbert. Are there any other questions? Senator Verger, did you have a question?
I just, on what basis was it denied, if I missed that?
From the county commissioners?
No.
Yeah, they said that, one, that they didn't think it was going to pass, and two, they didn't know that it had any merit. And we're talking about a parks district where the national average is 7 acres per thousand. We have less than 1 acre per thousand. We thought it was very clear that we had a need. We had over 300 signatures, which was like the requirement is 15%, and we had close to 25%. And we thought we did everything that we needed to do. And
okay, I just want to be clear in my mind. So in other words, if the bill clearly says that you do not have an argument if they deny the petition for approval because it does not meet the standards of the mm-hmm. statute, you have no problem with that. What this was subjective and simply said, even though you have abided by all these, we don't like
right.
We don't like your goal.
Right.
Is what it means. Okay, I just wanted to be sure.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just to be fair, too, to the Linn County Commissioners, after the court decision, they did agree to put it on the ballot, so I don't want to say that we have a rebel group of commissioners. That's not the point of this. Our belief is the commissioners really didn't understand that they were supposed to be looking at the criteria in the statute, and that's why we wanted to clarify the statute so it was crystal clear what their role in the approval process is.
Okay. Any other further questions? If not, John and Roger from Clackamas County, can you come up and share your concerns?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Roger Holbert. I'm with the Clackamas River Water, currently a district, soon to be an authority with the assistance of Clackamas County. And basically, I'm here today to oppose Senate Bill 660 as it is currently drafted and written. We've had recent discussions with the SDAO and what the other people shared with you, and I think that we'll probably come to an agreement. But I just wanted to state, essentially, I don't know if you've been given copies of the testimony that I'm about to give, but if I could paraphrase part of that. We've had a very positive experience with the county, Clackamas County. I think, you know, the history has shown that as the districts have tried to work together in the region, that there's been some difficulty with issues such as boundary control, governance, a lot of things. And we went to Clackamas County back in August and actually asked for their assistance to work with the local water districts at the best solution for whether or not we could form a water authority, protect our boundaries from annexation and withdrawal, and essentially to save the benefits of the economy of scale and things like that. As we read the bill, it certainly appears that the county will be their discretion and some of the capability they have currently to work with water districts in the best solution, I think, for the region has been removed in this process. Senate Bill 660 jeopardizes the Board of County Commissioners' ability to make decisions that are in the best interest of the county as a whole. I think certainly Clackamas County has demonstrated, at least to Clackamas River Water, that they are definitely interested and genuine in their interest in seeing that the county is best served through the districts that are there in the formation. Again, Clackamas River Water is opposed to Senate Bill 660 as it is currently written, as it erodes planning that is in the best interest of a county and could result in added tax bases from the proliferation of unnecessary districts, and this creates additional competition for scarce resources in the state, and all programs lose as a result.
Quick question. Are you okay if, in fact, as is on the record, the bill gets amended on the House side with the suggested amendment that Burton Weiss suggested a few minutes ago?
I am.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. John Mante, County Administrator with Clackamas County. I won't be but a moment because you have a long day ahead of you, it looks like.
Very long.
Yeah, we came down here today to oppose the bill in its current form. We believe it's kind of a friendly objection. We appreciate the language that county staff has put together with SDAO, and we believe that we'll make strides in resolving a better bill here at the end. We do believe that the county should have reasonable ability to apply standards, and those standards are allowed in the current law. I would add that the counties do need latitude when they review these different documents, and those are set forth, and we're comfortable with where we're going, and okay. I'll be very brief.
Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, Senator Berger.
Chair, I think that I have to sympathize that if they went through a lot of work on the first witnesses, and then the county simply maybe didn't understand and denied it based on something else. I do think that this, you have to be careful not to hamstring the county to be have flexibility in making good decisions. However, this could have unintended consequences as it's written.
I hear what you're saying. I thought that Burton Weiss responded to that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, they're not wanting to limit, and those 20 issues are very broadly written. I don't know.
Did you have a comment from Mr. Weiss? I'm sorry.
Mr. Weiss?
This certainly supersedes the county.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, the bill is not intended, and I don't believe it does, and on the record, to supersede the county's authority to make the decisions. What the bill does is make clear that the criteria that the county is to apply when evaluating a citizen petition for the formation of a district. The bill doesn't have anything to do with mergers, consolidations, or any of the other issues. It's only citizen petitions. It just makes clear to everyone involved, the citizens and the county, that it's these factors, the current factors. We haven't amended any of the factors in the current statute. These are the factors that you apply when you make your decision. So we haven't superseded anything. That's certainly not our intent. It's why we support the Clackamas County Amendment, because it makes that abundantly clear.
Do I have that amendment, Mr. Chair?
That amendment isn't here because it was just suggested 2 hours ago,
What does it say?
What it says in essence is, if the county determines that the petition meets all the criteria in the statute, then the county shall place it on the ballot. That's essentially what, that's almost word for word what the language is. Our language just says the county shall place it on the ballot. This language would clarify that if the county finds that the petition meets all the criteria, then they shall put it on the ballot. So I think that's why it's better language than was drafted in the bill. And it's certainly consistent with our intention on the bill.
If I could add, Mr. Chairman, the goal here is to actually have some type of ability to determine whether it meets the criteria or not. For example, anytime you create a city or a district, there's a lot of financial feasibility, economic analysis that has to go into that. The county has discretion in those areas, and if it meets those areas, the amendment then would allow it to go forward to the voters to decide.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Comments, questions?
Just one question. I'm reading the judge's decision here, and it seems to be very clear that no matter what happens, as far as the negotiations and the formation, the decision is going to be made by the voters. So all parties can go out and articulate their views to the voters, and they're going to be the final say in this. Is there any exception to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that's kind of the issue here, is this can't go to the voters under the current statute, or under the statute and our bill, unless the county commissioners determine it meets it. So that's our fear, is that, and we're not accusing counties of trying to stop citizen petitions, but because of the lack of the clarity in the statute, our fear is voters won't get the opportunity to have the vote unless they do like Mr. Raven did and go to a circuit court judge. And we think that's kind of silly. We ought to make the statute clear so everybody understands what's expected of them.
The reason I brought this before the committee is because I understood that this doesn't change the law, it clarifies it, and here's a circuit court decision that says so. Am I wrong in that? I mean, am I missing something? What do you want to do, committee?
Are we in the work session, Mr. Chair?
We're in a hearing at the moment. Yes.
I'll just end under discussion here. I'm uncomfortable sending unfinished legislation to the other side of the building to let them finish it. And I'm equally, I mean, I think part of the reason we're faced with that choice is because of a inadvertent timeline that we're dealing with that I think doesn't make a lot of sense.
I concur totally.
If there's three votes to move this bill forward, I'd like to vote no, almost as a protest more than anything else. I'd rather we fix the bill over here. I don't want to necessarily hold up the process if there's three additional votes that can move the bill. But my protest would be one that we shouldn't create an artificial deadline that allows us or forces us to not finish our work. And so I guess that's the end of my statement.
At the risk of losing this chairmanship, which I'm almost ready to give away, I'm asking if the president is hearing you, Senator Starr. I think that we're in this situation because we've got an artificially imposed deadline. I'm not supposed to hear any Senate bills after Friday. I've got permission, guess what, to do safe bills, I hope, after Friday, or we're in an unsafe situation. But other than that, I'm supposed to get all this done.
Mr. Chair, I see lots of people in the audience, though, from counties that aren't
talking, and there's nothing in my file folder.
They're probably not talking because they've all got bills farther down the stack, and they're wondering when they'll ever get home tonight.
Uh-huh.
You know? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I thought it was fairly clear. Is
Walker available? My issues are not substantive. I mean, they're procedural.
Yeah, and I agree.
Yeah.
I think half of the committee chairs, probably including you, Senator Verger, have asked for a little more time to deal with our agendas. You know, but there's not been a whole lot of flexibility on that. I'm trying to do my job. I'm trying to do what I've been asked to do. I would be glad to do an amendment and have it done over here and have this all tied up very pretty. It seems to me that the House committees have a little more time than we do.
Yes, they do.
And for that reason, I'm not so opposed to sending it over to the House side, because I had an illustration this morning of a committee where on the last day of their hearing, they will have more bills than all the bills they've gotten from the House so far. You know, that means that those committees over there aren't quite as busy.
Okay.
How are you on this one?
Let's see. I got a note about that. Just a moment.
Oh, good.
Lane County does not have any problem with it.
Lane County doesn't have any problem with it. Does that allow us to get this thing out of here and let the House finish this? Because they obviously don't have enough to do over
some
there.
Some people have some objections, but they are minor. Okay. Yeah,
and we've already agreed to a conceptual amendment on the House side. I know I don't like to do that normally, but there's...
This time of the year, we can't really be choosy, and I agree with you, Mr. Chair.
This time of the year, April 5th.
Well,
I know. Give me a break. That's what I've been saying.
We have deadlines over here, and so...
You know, the word dead comes to mind in those deadlines. Some of us are almost there.
All right, so I will support the bill.
All right. That can end the... we're split again, and I don't think we'd be so split if, in fact... we had adequate time to discuss these things.
Mm-hmm. Is the president listening?
I'm hoping so, but I'm going to close the hearing. We're showing our underwear much too much here. And I'm going to open a work session, huh?
Speak for yourself.
I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 660. Understand, please, that we've got on the record an agreement that there's going to be an amendment on the House side. We've got a couple protest votes that are coming forth. Can I have
and we have a dash, too, I believe?
No we don't
no
have
dashes?
Any.
No.
We're not dashing
we're
anywhere
not
on
dashing.
This one.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So, Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 660 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 660 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I need to put on the record that it is very, very difficult for me to see where the county commissioners shall...
Yes, receive. I understand. Mm-hmm. Anything else to discuss? Could the clerk please call the roll before one of us dies in the room here?
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Senator Berger?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
We'll walk her to the rescue one more time. Aye. Senate Bill 660 moves to the floor with a do-pass recommendation barely, and I don't even want to ask who's going to carry it at the moment. We'll figure that out later. I want to say something good. 707 doesn't have to be dealt with today. Is that right? Because there's another vehicle somewhere. I don't care if it's a motorcycle. That means we have one less to deal with. So let's go on to 1006. I'm going to ask Judith, is there anybody signed up on this bill? Good. I'm glad to hear that. Senate Bill, I'm opening a hearing on Senate Bill 1006.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 1006 requires public contracting agencies to document determination of lowest responsible bidder on a form prescribed by the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industries and to submit the form to the Commissioner. We have a no revenue impact, no word from fiscal on 1006.
I've got three people signed up. I want them all to come up at the same time if they're here. Pro and con, Jessica, John, and Bob. We'll slug this out for a couple minutes. We may or may not move this bill depending on our constitutional problems. $1,006. Who wants to go first? I guess I'll let Bob go first. He's the one in favor of this.
I'm the proponent, yes.
Yeah, you're the proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. I'll be as brief as possible. The reason we introduced Senate Bill 1006 is to try and get more compliance with existing law. This is an important tool for public contracting agencies in that they can use the existing law and the added enforcement provided by 1006 to make sure that the contractors that they select for public construction are not only the low bidder, but the responsible bidder. It's taken the guts of the current law in subsection 2. Those determinations, that language is taken directly from the federal procurement law. That language also is very common in what we call CMGC construction at the state and local level, where contractors have to show that they are indeed responsible when they go through that exempt bidding process. Prior to the addition of the, I should say, under the typical bidding process, what we call design, bid, build, for many years, the lowest responsible bidder, and that is how any agency has to award a contract to the lowest responsible bidder. For many years, that meant you had a low bid and you had a bond. That was essentially what responsible was, you had a bond. In the 1999 session, a number of us, some of us here at the table, actually put in the responsible. We tried to identify what a responsible bidder is by taking this language out of federal procurement. Frankly, it hasn't been used as it should. We thought it was an excellent tool for local governments and the state. It hasn't been used as we think it should be. The occurrence that we're trying to address doesn't happen every day, and I don't want to portray that. I just wrote down a few disasters in public contracting just to show the committee what we're trying to get at. A few years ago, a large construction company from California called OC America got the low responsible bid on Clackamas High School. It wasn't too long. They were hopelessly behind schedule. The project was not even on the right footprint, and they were thrown off the job. They were rewarded by going over to Sherwood High School District and landing a high school for Sherwood School District, where they subsequently also ended up in court suing the local agency. Recently, there was a controversy in Coos Bay over this pipeline project. Perhaps Senator Berger is aware of it. Mm. I spoke to a very good friend of mine, Commissioner Witte, who I've known for many years, mainly just to console her because it was extraordinarily controversial. And she said, Bob, you know, instead of people complaining about what happened here, by the way, if you're not familiar, this company was subsequently removed from the project. I don't know how much money they were over budget. It's all in court, state and federal, I understand. And she said, instead of complaining about this, why don't you guys change the law? I didn't want to tell her that she already had the ability, but this bill will help local agencies in making those determinations when not to hire somebody. The last example is just very fresh. A couple weeks ago, I'm reading the Oregonian, there's an issue on an ODOT project on I-5 around Roseburg. There's a bridge that's just completed. but it may be more cracked than the one it replaced. That contractor was thrown off a project in my neighborhood, Sunnyside, Sunnybrook Interchange on I-205, thrown off the job, and yet just a few months later they're awarded a multi-million dollar contract with the same contracting agency, again fail. And the part that I wanted to bring to the committee's attention, ODOT's the largest public contracting agency in the state, yet they were quoted in the Oregonian as saying we had to take their bid because they were the lowest bidder and they had a bond. So no, I guess nobody's following this stuff. To cut to the chase, the process I'm trying to go through on this is trying to work with the local governments, the contractors. Hope to get the bill into the House. There will be one amendment that I'm working with DAS on some amendments because they do the state contracting. I would tell you that it's our determination that the Department of Justice should prescribe the form because that's what they do is write the public contracting laws for the state as well as the Attorney General's model contracting rules. Makes more sense. There's also a couple bills in the House I'd like to get in a mix, maybe a little package, come back to you regarding the threshold for prevailing wage and projects where there's a state and federal contribution of monies. The way this would work, again, to make it simple, when a public contracting agency gets their low bid with what we call the apparent low bidder, the apparent low bidder would be given this standard form used by all agencies to fill it out as to what constitutes what's responsible, and that's things like do you have your bonding capacity, have you had claims against you by for not paying your subcontractors, have you finished your jobs that you've worked on before, have you sued agencies for something. That'll all be worked out amongst people like us three here. There's a public contracting coalition that I belong to, which is made up of nothing but public contracting folks and folks like myself that are in the industry. The contract would then complete that. I anticipate a one-page form so the public contracting agency can look at it, make sure it's accurate, and then feel better, at least, that they've awarded a project to both the low and responsible bidder. I want to just say in one last sentence. There's been some questions raised by somebody, and I don't know who that person is yet, as to why the building trades are supporting this bill, and I want to tell you why. We're taxpayers, too. And we know, we follow this industry, we know who can perform, who can't perform, who's good at doing what, and it is extraordinarily aggravating to us as taxpayers to see an award of a contract given to someone that we can almost predict is not going to be able to fulfill the functions of the contract. And I'd also like to point out that this issue is regards bid protests. I want to let you know unions have no standings in a bid protest at all. So this is between aggrieved bidders and the public contracting agency. I haven't got a particular axe to grind here other than I think this is good public policy.
Thank you. Questions,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Not a question, just a clarification. On the Ford's Bridge issue that you brought up, it wasn't a contractor, other than the contractor asked the department on a change in how they were going to pour.
Exactly.
ODOT was the one that gave them the green light. It was an ODOT employee that in the course of doing his job should have done a better job. And so I just wanted to highlight that ODOT gave them the green light, and on that pour, concrete pour, did it out of sequence, shouldn't have done it the way they did it.
That's right.
And, you know, maybe the contractor should have known that they shouldn't have done that, but really the ODOT is at fault, and an employee there was the one that gave them the green light. That employee is no longer with ODOT.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I agree. I just wanted to clarify that.
Good. Other comments? Yes.
Mr. Chair, on the pipeline, I think that Mr. Shipwreck was very kind. He didn't go into the disastrous impacts that it really had. not only on a safety issue like a pipeline, like a gas pipeline, but the funding that now has to be caught up by the taxpayers because simply the responsible bidder idea was not used. It was very serious. I strongly support something. And they could have used the responsible bidder.
Yes,
we have used it even in Coos Bay in the city prior to this kind of contracting. So they did have use to it, but I would strongly support the bill.
Okay. Jessica?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with AGC, and we're here in opposition to this bill, not because we believe that we ought to be awarding contracts to irresponsible contractors, not because we support the kind of activity that you've heard about today. I mean, it is the poor performance or mistakes of poor choices on public contracts that end up in the news, and those are the kinds of contracts we hear about, not the thousands of contracts that are let every year in this state that are let to low responsible bidders that go well and build the kind of communities that we all enjoy and live in. The concerns we have in this bill are that this doesn't solve the problem. The ability of agencies and the quite frankly guts that an agency needs to throw a contractor out of the process if they are truly not a responsible contractor aren't going to be achieved through a form that's submitted to an agency or that the agency submits to somebody else. That agency has the tools today to evaluate the contractor for its responsibility, to make a determination whether or not that is a responsible party to be contracting with, and to either enter into a contract or reject them for cause, which they have the ability to do today. Our concern is this is another piece of paper that isn't going to get to resolving the issue that Bob's raised. And it is a real issue in a very small number of cases. The other concerns we have, when we talk about this form, and you heard Bob mention a couple of things that he'd include in the form, but about whether somebody has ever sued an agency, whether they've ever had claims against their bond, those kinds of indicators aren't necessarily indicators of whether you have a responsible contractor or not. If you've got a contractor that has been in business for years and years and years, there is going to come a point where they and an agency are going to butt heads. And it might be a legitimate dispute. And it may get elevated to the court level. Should somebody be thrown out for what is a legitimate dispute? Should somebody be thrown out because they're on a huge project and they've had a prevailing wage claim against their bond? If you've ever seen the prevailing wage statute, you know it's an 80-page booklet. And that is difficult to follow and difficult to make sure your subcontractors follow. So there are legitimate reasons that contractors have issues, and what our concern is that legitimate contractors who do a great job every day in this state don't end up being thrown out because of a form that takes their entire history and melts it down to a one-word answer. That's a legitimate concern on part of a contractor who, again, the vast majority of our contractors, they aren't the problem children that we're talking about. We're talking about a handful that come along that agencies, if they're paying attention at all, should know about, and they should take the responsibility to do these kind of determinations. But a lot of the problem here is education. These agencies need to know about this law. They need to exercise their due diligence on the Coos Bay Pipeline. The at agency needed to exercise its due diligence when it's entering into a contract of that size to make sure you've got a contractor that is responsible and is going to do the job it set out to do. That for those reasons, and again, we appreciate the issue that Mr. Shiprack and his group are trying to resolve. We share their concerns, but we don't believe that this bill solves that problem.
Mr. Chair, Jessica, the company that was hired in Coos Bay had a number of lawsuits against them. When the contract was awarded, no one knew that. Now, wouldn't this bill take care of that? Wouldn't this bill be able to inform the county commissioners that this company had a very spotty record at best?
But Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I don't believe that this bill would do any better job of informing the agency whether, let me step back. There are a lot of contractors who, if you go and take a look at their record, contractors who every day do a great job and don't have the kind of disasters that we're talking about, that have had lawsuits, numerous lawsuits. Who brought them for a variety of reasons. Perhaps it's a disagreement they had with the agency. But for whatever reason, they've had issues. And some of them legitimate. The issue for the agency is not putting it on a form and making determination based on that form. It's the agency going to that contractor, which they have the absolute right to do today, and asking the hard questions and doing the research, which they have the ability to do today, and we believe they need to do today. But boiling it down to a form that, when you look at the form and you say, oh, look, they've had a few claims against their bond for non-payment of their prevailing wages, which may have been, in fact, a subcontractor problem, not a general contractor problem. You know, do you put a legitimate contractor in a position where they're going to get disqualified simply because of a few claims here and there? I'm not saying or trying to defend the contractor who got the Coos Bay Pipeline project. It's not what I'm trying here to do. I think agencies have the ability today. They need to know about that ability, and they need to exercise that responsibility.
Senator George.
It appears to me that the bill doesn't have a clear definition of what constitutes unsatisfactory performance. With that in mind, I see the potential, and I'm just reading this, so I'm basically stealing this idea, but it totally fit what I was thinking about, and that is that, in fact, you may have people coming back and say, wait a minute, that was unjust, I'm the low bidder, I should be awarded this, and a lawsuit ensues. Do you see that potential in the bill without the clarity as to what that unsatisfactory performance is?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we agree. I mean, that's part of the problem that agencies have, is this law, that though it rests on federal procurement law, it's difficult for a local agency. It's our understanding that this law is primarily used to deal with big government contracts, people like Boeing, etc., not the kind of small or even large like the Coos Bay Pipeline, but the day-to-day kind of contracts that agencies enter into. It's our feeling that this law, if we really want to give agencies the tool to deal with responsibility determinations, we need to sit down, we need to be specific. We need to be clear. I mean, we've heard of cases where somebody who isn't a licensed or a registered contractor has been awarded contracts, and, oh, don't worry about it because they'll be registered before they start work on the contract. That's not acceptable. And so those are the kinds of instances where we think we need to be specific in the law. We need to give agencies the tools to do the right thing, but they need to exercise the options that they have today.
John, your turn.
I want to say, committee, you know the artificial deadlines that we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning on trying to be done by 6 o'clock, but if we get to 6 o'clock and have to take a break for dinner, we will, and we'll come back here and work half the night. We have 17 bills. I plan on finishing these 17 bills. We've only done 7 so far. So let's move as quickly as we can.
Okay. Chairman Shields, member of the committee, I understand I was just told to be rather quick. John Oshel, Penny Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. We strongly support the goal of what this bill is here for. We believe it is the wrong answer. Once again, asking to certify on a weak definition doesn't really solve the problem. What we need to do is clean up the definition, make that clear. To get the short answer, we believe that probably could be done quite easily within the existing law by having the Attorney General incorporate some criteria as to what satisfactory record of performance, what satisfactory record of integrity, what does that mean, and have them get that in the model rules, which then means it would be implemented by the local agency unless they chose to implement their own set of rules. The issue, basically, from the local agency is where we are now with existing rule on both the record of performance and the record of integrity. All we have in the definition is a satisfactory record of performance, period. Nothing to tell us what that means, nothing to do with what the criteria is, unless you have a real slam dunk solid case. You can't throw a contractor out without leaving yourself up for major liabilities. In many cases, you're talking about agencies also that may not well be in a good pipeline to find out about that contract that was someplace in some other location. We believe that we need to, through the Justice Department and through a process that will be long and difficult because of the definition problems that Jessica has addressed, get some criteria that the local agencies, and for that matter the state, can use. Give us the tools for what we can use rather than this just vague record of integrity, record of performance.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, could I clarify one?
Yes.
I guess I wasn't clear. The whole intent of the form was to have the Justice Department clarify the language out of the Federal Procurement Code to do what John has suggested so that it is clear what these things mean.
Okay, so the two of you are kind of on the same page.
I'll never speak for the government.
Chair Shields, I think we're all on the same page that we need those rules clarified. The question is, do we use within the existing law, within the existing model rules, mechanism to do it, or do we create a law that says, in this case, a different department has to do it? Now, I understand he's advocating we do shift it back to the Justice Department. Yes. I think we're all there. Our sense is, the law is there, let's just do it. Let's not create a law that locks us into a form that doesn't exist yet. By doing it with the Attorney General rules, we could have an agency, if they chose to use a different set of definitions, they could, but it sets up a set of definitions that most of them could and would use.
Questions, Senator George?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the cities are going to make it up here, but I hope everyone looks at what they have presented to us as far as testimony and look at what is already required of them in order to determine whether the person is qualified.
Excuse me, I had another question.
Oh, okay, I'm done. I was just hoping everyone looked at the testimony from the League of Oregon Cities because they specify what is now required of them to determine. And it's a really good list, which should smoke out the bad contractor.
I know, but obviously hasn't, given the pipelines, the bridges, and intersections we've been hearing about.
What? I mean, they don't do it.
They don't do it?
They don't do it.
They got this form, they got this list, and they don't do it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Isn't it the contracting community that ought to be the ones that hold their contracting agency's feet to the fire?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, there are contractors who are second low bidders who have a great interest in making sure that if the contract's been awarded to a company that isn't doing this, they have their right to throw a bid protest, and that happens.
And at that point, Mr. Chair, just to follow up with a question with Jessica, at that point, doesn't the contracting agency have to go through and justify that they went through this list that we have been given and says, you know, we checked all these boxes? And that make, I mean, doesn't that force the contracting agency to follow the law? And yet we have testimony that they're not following the law. So what is it? Are we just don't have, the contractors are too nice and not challenging one another?
That's basically it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that is true in some instances, though I would say, again, that agencies that aren't interested in following the law today, this form isn't going to make a whit of difference. I mean, if we want to get serious about dealing and being clear about the standards that need to be met and be specific, they need to be in rule, as Mr. Oshel has indicated, or we need to outline them in statute specifically. Adding a form, that sucker will get checked off just as quickly as, you know, the law is perhaps being ignored today, to the extent that it is.
Well, we're all clear on one thing. There's a problem.
You know, Mr. Chair, these bid bills are always problematical. I remember the 1999 session quite well, or 2001. I can't remember which, but oh, man, it's never easy.
Public contracting is really a lot of fun.
Yes, it is.
Job security.
I'm going to ask you three to step back. There was one other person who wanted to testify, and probably one that doesn't want to testify, but I'm going to ask him to come up anyway, and I'll bet he can figure out who he is. Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jared Broadfoot here to testify on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Plumbing and Mechanicals Contractors Association, and the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors National Association, some of which who are AGC members as well, to testify in support of Senate Bill 1006. To be extremely brief, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a form, a piece of paper. We're not creating a whole, we're not diving into the public contracting law or the lowest responsible bidder law and changing anything. We're requiring a piece of paper to be formed to ensure compliance. And then that piece of paper, obviously, Commissioner Gardner, we would work very closely with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, with AGC, and all of the other stakeholders to make sure that form that's going to be required to be filled out, that it's fair and that it's appropriate. We're not doing anything else here other than a piece of paper in order to make sure ensure compliance with the lowest responsible bidder statute. So with that said, we certainly understand some of the concerns that have been raised, but we're just looking for a piece of paper to make sure to ensure compliance. That's it. Thank you.
I like that. Go ahead, Dan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And
Dan didn't ask to come up. I'm asking him to come up because I read something you'd written about this, and at the center of it, you kind of told what you did, but go ahead.
Well, basically, Mr. Chair, you know, we're certainly in support of the legislation. It would simply require public agencies to document their compliance. Basically, there are several other states who do have this form. We've seen some models from some other states that can simply be added to the prevailing wage book that we send out every year. An easy form to, we're getting to a web-based situation, it can be easily downloaded and filled out. It can simply work. We don't see this as an extreme workload impact in any way. And Boley would just collect and file the information related for public contracts and received by public agencies.
Questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, it just seems like it's a very simple fix, a very simple measure, and it's become very complex through the testimony. So, Senator Starr?
I'm not sure it's that simple.
Oh, okay. Well, you were mumbling. You shall not mumble.
One other thing I might add, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that you know, so you certainly have Boley's commitment to work with all parties interested to set up rules to make this work for everyone.
Mr. Chair, question. Would this would be required on every contract that any contracting agency would move through the process? So every time that there's a new contract, that ODOT does a new code contract, or every city does a new contract, they would have to, or would it be, you know, if they have a form on file for such and such contractor, they can just pull out that form and shoot it down to you?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we would have to set up that process within rule. However, I would imagine if it is a contract that's already been doing contracting work, filled out the form the first time, I'm sure they can simply fill out a duplicate rather easily and rather quickly. Matter of fact, I can imagine that in today's modern technological age, you could probably electronically file it. We'd like to get web-based and see if we get to that situation. We'd have to work it out in rule how we go about doing that, but I'd like to see it get to that point where it's simple and absolutely just a push of a button to do it.
That may require some of these cities and counties to update their high-tech.
Well, we'd have the...
By a computer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that would allow the availability should they have the technology.
Well, Senator George, looks like we've been left behind.
You're in charge again.
Okay, I'm back in charge again.
Oh, we're just trying to disintegrate the whole process around here. That's all we're doing. Earlier today, I said something about a swamp. Is there a way you can get us out of this swamp? I'm torn because there's some of us that would like to go ahead with this bill, recognizing it's not adequate, but it's better than nothing. It doesn't make things more complicated. Where's the committee at the moment? How do you guys feel? You're not there.
Mm-mm.
You're not there?
I'm troubled that it has the opposition that it does. On one hand, I'm a little surprised. I like to support the trades in this issue. I think that they've brought an issue that they've recognized is a problem. But I like to find a way to support them. going back to my earlier comments and other bills leaving committee unfinished. With a promise we'll fix them in the House is troublesome. I'm also concerned about the fiscal on this bill. I mean, we're mandating something new to cities and counties. I'm not sure that we've had a fiscal impact on what that would mean. It should be small, but we don't have anything. And I think the largest contractor in the state at the state level is ODOT that does these things. But every other, there's DAS builds buildings and does contract, and we don't have a clue about what that cost might or might not be for this additional paperwork. So those are some of my concerns. Again, I'd like to find a way to help the trades, and yet we're faced with this deadline that makes us choose today. I'd rather not have to choose until tomorrow or the next day.
And to complicate issues, the powers that be stole one of my members. It could have given me a vote to get this thing done. So I sit here with part of my committee.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
You, to get the constitutional votes you need, you could recess this bill and we could hear it later. I have to go to a meeting. It's been called by the caucus leader at 5. So you could recess this. We could take this up later in the day. We're coming back for a second shift tonight.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Is your intention to move this bill without a fiscal impact?
Yes, it is. A certain person that I will not name said they hate to say that, but do that. A person in authority. I'm just going to leave it there. I'm not going to say another word.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Before we leave,
Senator George,
Commissioner Gardner, you made a statement they're going to fill out this report and go through the whole new procedure, and you're going to file it. What exactly would it do? What benefit will it be for you to have it in your hand?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, the benefit would be there is there to verify whenever there is a contest, whenever someone says that there's a problem with this contractor. As Mr. Shiprack outlined on the Coos Bay Pipeline project, for instance, when in fact there was when there were people who brought up the issue of this contractor and having other problems, it would be there and available and ready to go so that the agency can use it, can explore it, can verify it. That's the ability there is whenever there's any public comment on that particular contractor situation.
Quick follow-up. Quick, very quick. So you have this on record. The people that authorized that construction of that pipeline said, we went through, we checked off all this stuff, we thought we had a legitimate contractor, it went south on us. Doesn't that put them actually in harm's way? Because it's one more statement they've made that we have in fact examined this contractor. And
Mr. Chair, Senator George, actually what it would do is if we had that particular contractor on the Coos Bay Pipeline project, for instance, and it was now 5, 6, 8 years later, and they're in another city in another part of the state up in Baker City or wherever where they never realized this contractor did anything on the Coos Bay Pipeline project, it would allow the availability for that to come back up and realize there are problems with that contractor. So long term, it can be of great benefit.
I'd like to close the hearing on Senate Bill 1006 and open a work session
on Senate Bill 1006.
No amendments.
There's no amendments to this bill.
Correct.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to make the motion to move this bill, and then I'll make a statement after that. I move Senate Bill 106 to the Senate floor. Or 1006.
1006. Thank you for the motion.
And I will just say that I've got concerns about this bill. I'm not totally comfortable with it, but I'm going to support moving it to the floor. I'm going to continue working with the proponents and the opponents of this bill.
Do you all hear him?
I will watch this bill as it goes to the House. I'm inconsistent today. I apologize for that.
The president has made us all inconsistent today.
But I think that there's not an inordinate hill to climb here on this issue, and I've had some conversations with Mr. Shipwreck about some other issues, or maybe not a conversation, but I had a note from him about some other issues that may be addressed, and I'd like to see those issues addressed, and you know, perhaps this will be a vehicle that we can get those other issues addressed. So based on that, I'll be a hesitant aye vote to move the bill forward, and I'll be watching carefully.
And Senator Verger comes back. We're kind of running you all over the building.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. Well,
Senator Starr.
Okay.
Senator Starr has graciously consented to be a yes vote to get it out of committee now that we've got you back, but that's just par for the course. We are in work session. We've had a motion on moving Senate Bill 1006 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, recognizing, and Senator Starr said it very eloquently, he's wanting to continue working with the parties on this bill, watching it from the House side. Let's see if we can't solve the problem and do this right. So with that, I'd like to ask if there's any further discussion on 1006. If not, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Senator George?
No.
Senator Starr?
Aye. Yes.
Senator Berger?
Yes.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. Is there somebody that would like to carry this bill?
Oh, I'll carry it, Mr.
Senator Walker will carry the bill. And with that, we're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 1006. One of the things I want to point out is we've still got about 10 bills to do. People are running out of my committee and back and forth and so on. But in the last half, we're not doing any hearings. This is just work sessions, and we're going to start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 316.
Mr. Chair, members, this is the one recommendation I will make today on waiting for the fiscal, and that is on 316. If you will remember, this bill was before us once before. Senate Bill 316 requires a state agency to notify the advocate for minority, comma, women and emerging small business, that advocate, to notify them of an award of a public contract with a value of $5,000 or more. It would direct, the original bill directs the Department of Administrative Services to adopt rules to establish the process and timeline for that notification. We had a while back before us the Dash 1 amendments, which deletes submission to DAS and requires instead each agency to adopt the rules. As Senator Starr pointed out, at that time, that could cause a fiscal impact that would require it to go to Ways and Means. I have just within the last 20 minutes checked with Legislative Fiscal. We are still waiting for them to come up with the actual estimate on the Dash 1 amendment. I know in this particular case it was important to the committee to know that fiscal, so we knew whether or not to move the Dash 1. So I would recommend here that we hold this one, carry this over till Thursday when we can actually see the fiscal and know whether or not the committee wants to go with the amendments.
We got some people that have been sitting back there for about 3 hours on the bill, which is very frustrating to me. And somebody can't come up with a fiscal for us. That's real frustrating. Is there any chance we'd consider passing it out anyway? Is there anybody signed up? Oh, nobody's here signed up, of course. I mean, this is a bill, and it's very obvious that we're trying to get it straightened out in such a way that there isn't a fiscal that gets in the way of an incredibly good idea. The Dash 1 amendments could be passed. We could decide if we wanted to. If there was something ridiculous that happened, I suppose we could even call it back.
That's true.
If you guys were amenable to that. It's getting more like making sausage all the time. Fact is, you've got a great bill here. I'd like to see it go forward. I'd like to see it get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
If the fiscal doesn't come back the way it darn well ought to come back, we can pull the bill back to committee. But again, I'm up against that deadline thing. Mr. President, please fire me. I'm getting tired of this. Mm-hmm. Somebody else can share this warm wrestle. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I really support the concept behind this bill because during the interim, we attempted to find out whether or not instructions sent from Ways and Means Committee that I chaired, whether these responses were being made relative to minority women in emerging business. And it was very difficult to get solid information as to whether the instruction from the legislature was being carried out. And this may be one in which I'm saying, okay, well, another piece of paper in somebody's file. But, I mean, it at least would be more helpful than what I got out of the interim as far as accountability.
Okay. What's the wishes of the committee? I'm still proposing, and I was trying to explain, going to explain to Senator Starr that given, and I can't understand why we don't have a fiscal with all the, I mean, how long ago did Senator Starr ask this question? What I guess I'm suggesting is we could pass it out. They ought to come up with the kind of fiscal that would allow this to go forward. If they don't, we can pull it back to committee. I would like to move this. The concept's a great, it's a great bill. I don't want us to get hung up on the technicality here.
Why don't we just send it down to Ways and Means, and the bill, they can deal with a fiscal that we may or may not see. If there's not a fiscal, they can pop it.
It's supposed to go to Ways and Means?
They can just pop it back out.
It does not have a referral.
It doesn't have a referral to Ways and Means.
Well, I understand that, but I think that we've got 120 agencies that this bill requires something of, and it seems to me that is not...
Sir, anybody in the back of the room that can address that issue in a helpful way for us?
I mean, if we have 120 agencies that have to adopt rules, there's got to be there's a cost involved in that.
Is this going to require 120 agencies to adopt rules? Simple question. Complicated question. Impossible question. I don't know. That's why I asked it.
It's actually a simple one. Senator Shields, members of the committee, Lydia Muniz, governor's advocate for minority women and emerging small businesses. What the bill proposes, it only impacts those agencies under DAS authority that would directly report using the state's electronic purchasing system. For those other agencies, what it seems to signify, and I think where we're hung up is in that each other agency would be required to propose rules. A couple of thoughts on that. One would be most agencies already have a rulemaking process, so I don't anticipate that this would be a huge deal if that's what they needed to do. But I would like to offer another possible alternative for you, which is if it comes back that there is a fiscal impact that would require it to go to Ways and Means, perhaps an alternative method would be a second amendment that basically has state agencies identifying a process. So they're not having to go through a rulemaking process if it comes back to be fiscally high. So they would just work with my office directly, come up with the process so we can still get at the information, but they're not having to go through the entire rulemaking process. So I would offer that to you.
Senator Starr, is that acceptable?
So we want to do you want to conceptually amend the bill today to accommodate that?
I'd be glad to.
We could pull it, we could go forward if it comes back with the fiscal before.
Stick that up so it's on
Thank
record
you,
here.
Mr. Chair, members, here's what I see as the options here. If you want the Dash 1 amendments, we have done, as we have done on another bill, if it comes back more than a minimal fiscal impact, we could bring it back to committee and with the amendment that perhaps Ms. Muniz is suggesting now for your consideration. The other alternative is to pass it out without an amendment, and we do have a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the original bill that is going through DAS. But certainly it's my understanding that the advocate would like the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair, if we didn't accept the Dash 1 amendments, who is the department?
DAS.
The wisdom of the committee? Yeah. This late we've run out of wisdom?
No, I just think each agency shall adopt rules is probably leading someone to think that it might be a strong fiscal impact. And I think that's the question. And if you pass it without the Dash 1,
Senator Starr, what's your thinking? You raised the most pertinent questions.
Well, I think if we amended, we could amend the bill with of the language that's been proposed. Each agency shall create a process in consultation with the advocate. We could conceptually strike adopt rules and insert create a process. Strike two words, insert three. I know that's not the preferred approach, but neither is the preferred approach for us to get done with Senate bills on Friday.
That's right. That's not my preferred approach.
That would take care of, I think, the issue.
Senator Starr suggested striking two words, adding three words. You want to run through that again?
Judith is having a heart attack.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see if this works for you. This might be a simpler way, and that is just to a strike, and that is using with the Dash 1 amendments.
You're on line.
Now, if you look on the original bill, line 12, mm-hmm. The amendment would strike the department and say each agency, mm-hmm. Leave shall, mm-hmm. Strike adopt rules in consultation with the advocate, too. So it would then read, each agency shall establish a process and timeline, I guess we'd take off the plural there, for providing the notice and information required. Might that work?
I don't know that you want to write out the in consultation with the advocate. I think you could say each agency shall establish. It shall strike adopt rules and put a comma and says that's in consultation with the advocate establish and strike two establish a process. I don't know that you have to strike out consultation
right
with the advocate.
You're right about this.
Okay, he says strike shall.
Ms. Senator George?
He sees me fidgety because we were trying to do this once before to another committee, and all of a sudden the folks just a couple halls down came running in here saying, Judith, where are we? I'm doing this.
We've done this before.
As far as authority.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, certainly it would be everyone's preference not to do conceptual amendments. That's true. It's still the prerogative of the chair to go forward as he wants.
Well, I mean, I'm left with this tool because of this unhappy circumstance that we've been put in.
I like it.
And I just want to repeat it, and Senator Starr, your version was the best one, I think.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So can you repeat line 12 for us?
Line 12 would read, each agency shall, comma, in consultation with the advocate, comma, establish a process and timeline for, et cetera.
Providing the notice.
So you strike two as well in that line, T-O. And you strike the the plural in timeline.
Yeah. Right. So. That's fairly clear.
I think that would be very clear and acceptable.
Can we adopt this conceptual amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
We are in work session, correct?
Yes.
Yes, we have no public hearing.
I would move that we adopt the conceptual amendment as just outlined.
Okay, for the record, Senator Starr moves that we adopt the conceptual amendment, which says in line 12 of Senate Bill 316, each agency shall, comma, in consultation with the advocate, comma, establish a process and timeline for providing the notice, etc. Okay? Is there any objection to that conceptual amendment? If not, so move.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Move the dash ones to Senate Bill 316 as well.
Okay. Senator Starr moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 316. Is there any objection? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So we have both now the conceptual and the dash one amendments adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Move Senate Bill 316 as amended to the Senate floor if they do pass.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 316 with both of the amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would the clerk call the roll? Is somebody racing up to tell me I can't do this? Call the roll.
Senator
Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Senator Walker? Chair Shields?
Aye. Senate Bill 316 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm assuming Senator Gordley will carry the bill.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming up and helping us out. I appreciate it very much. It looks like we are now at Senate Bill 402. Judith?
Yes.
I know you're having trouble keeping up with this.
No, we got it.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 402 authorizes domestic water supply districts to certify and present delinquent water rent or charges to the tax assessor for assessment and collection in a manner provided for the assessment and collection of property taxes. We have before us the dash two amendments that you have a hand engrossed version of the dash two amendments. The dash two amendments requires the certificate to be in a format prescribed by the county. It requires the certificate to be presented to the county tax assessor on or before July 15th of the year in which the collection is made. It allows the tax collector to charge a $5 fee for each delinquent water rent or charge certified, and it authorizes the tax assessor to assess the delinquent charges and related costs against the premises on the next general property assessment and tax rolls. I'm happy to say that we have the fiscal and revenue on the dash two amendments. We have received a no fiscal impact on the dash twos, and you do have in your materials the revenue impact, which is showing a plus in revenues of $2.4 million in the 05-07 biennium, plus $2.6 million in the 07-09 biennium, and processing fees, if I've calculated that correctly, is $50,000 in each of the next two biennium. That would be a plus to revenues.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Why wouldn't a water district file a lien against delinquent accounts?
I wish Senator Westland was here to answer your question. Do some of you have a better recollection of his testimony than I do?
I wish I had more testimony in my file to refresh me on this issue.
Senator Westland was just in here a few minutes ago. Too bad we can't go get him back. Do you want to move on to the other bill and ask him to come down and answer our questions? He's obviously with the majority leader. And
kind of an obvious question that he might have some answer to.
Yeah, there is an obvious answer somewhere. It's back here in the back of my head. But when you're racing around like this, that too begins to malfunction. I'm going to close this for a minute and see if staff can't go get Senator Westland to come down. If he can't, tell him his bill's in trouble. Okay?
And he might tell us how they're going to collect it, too.
Yeah, okay. Let me close Senate Bill 402 for a minute. And I want to open Senate Bill 420. Earlier today, interested parties were here, and I don't think they are anymore, but I'm still going to open Senate Bill 420. At least I know what to do with this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 420 directs the Oregon Government Standards and Practices Commission to charge public bodies an amount based on the number of public officials serving the public body for purposes of funding activities of the commission. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. You have before you the dash 2 amendments, which actually include, if you noticed, you had an earlier dash 1 amendment. The dash 2s include, start with the dash 1s, and in addition to the statutory reference correction that Legislative Council has presented in the dash 1s, in addition to that correction, it exempts a person who is not compensated from counting as a public official for purposes of charging the public bodies in order to fund the commission. So we are taking out volunteers, true volunteers that are not compensated from the headcount when determining those charges. That's what the dash 2s do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm going to let you go find Senator Westland. On this bill, let me tell you what's going on behind the scenes. What I'd like to do is simply take Senate Bill 420, accept the dash 2 amendments and refer it to Ways and Means. And the reason I want to do this is because Senator Frank Morris and Senator Betsy Johnson have a solution in Ways and Means that they're working on, a way of funding the Ethics Commission. I know that they've been working at it for some time, but I think they want this vehicle down there. Go ahead.
I had a note from the League of Oregon Cities saying that that's the reason that they're not going to be here opposing the bill at this time.
Right.
And then I also had a note from Senator Morris saying that they are working on some funding and that hopefully the bill can go to Ways and Means and let them continue
right.
their work.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I had a conversation with both Senator Johnson and Senator Morris on this particular issue, and I raised this issue. Mike, the problem I have, quite frankly, is not unlike issues I've already raised tonight. Senator Morris and Senator Johnson are talking about substantive policy, and those issues ought to be discussed, debated in the substantive committee, not in Ways and Means.
Right.
That's the process that we have
that's
set
right.
up. If we want to change that process, and I could advocate quite well that we should, because you know, separating the policy and the funding of these things doesn't make a lot of sense in a lot of times, and other states, you know, do it differently than we do. But we set up a process that we have substantive committees that deal with the substantive issues, and we have a Ways and Means committee that deals with the funding issues. And that's a concern that I have as it relates to this bill and other bills that are moving around the process. Having said that, I told Senator Morris and Senator Johnson that the reason that we're moving this bill to Ways and Means is not because of anything except an arbitrary deadline that's been imposed on this body that doesn't allow us to do our work. And so I will support moving this bill down there, but I just want to voice my concern and objection about the process.
I want to be clear, President El Presidente. I wasn't the one that said that the process was arbitrary just now. but it is. I mean, we should be having the substantive discussion in here.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr is exactly right as far as the process is concerned. All of the substantive policy should be discussed at this level. The problem that we have this afternoon is that,
and that we'll
they
have the rest of the week.
They don't have their proposal ready.
Right.
Now, it could be that perhaps you could get this postponed until they get their policy and still bring it back for a hearing. It may not get much, you know, I don't know how it works when it goes to Ways and Means this way. Because it strictly is a policy issue, and especially what they're working on.
Oh, yeah, it's way different than what this bill is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you want to tell us a little bit about what you understand it to be?
I would prefer that Senator Johnson or Senator Morris were here to explain it, but they're talking about actually a very substantive reforming of the GSPC and where it's located and who it reports to and how it's funded, and it's a pretty significant policy.
And it's a noble effort from what I've seen.
You know, I think we'd all do well to as far as in the public's eye, reform that agency.
Tell you what, if all four of us would go to the Senate President and say, we think that this kind of substantive discussion should occur in a substantive committee. After all, it deals with the ethics by which we are bound.
It does. It does.
Then let's take on the President and say, we're going to do this when we get this stuff done, rather than just shucking it on down to Ways and Means.
I would be more comfortable with that. I think Senator Starr is exactly right.
If that's the choice that you'd like to, I mean, I'll support you, Mr. Chair, in that.
Well, at least when I go into his office, I don't get beat up by myself. All four of us can go into his office and get beat up on this one. Is that okay?
Oh, well, I'll stand next to you, accept the beating, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We're gonna close the hearing on Senate Bill 420. We're going to keep it in our committee, and we're going to go to the President as a body and say we want this extended beyond. We can put it in a letter or whatever it takes. And with that, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 420. Judith is impeccable in her timing. She can at least tell us whether Senator Westland is on planet Earth,
yes,
on his way down here.
Way.
He's on his way.
Okay.
Do we want to open Senate Bill 557 in a work session just real quickly while he's on his way? Let's do that. Let's open 557 real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 557 requires the Office of Emergency Management to develop tsunami warning information and evacuation plans and to establish uniform tsunami warning signals. It requires that transient lodging facilities located within the tsunami inundation zones post the warning information and evacuation plans that would declare an emergency effective on passage. You have in your packet the -1 amendments that are hand engrossed there for you. The -1 amendments replaces the Office of Emergency Management responsibilities with the following. It requires OEM to, in consultation and cooperation with the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, to first of all develop and adopt by rule tsunami warning information and evacuation plans for distribution to facilities located within the tsunami inundation zone, and secondly, to facilitate and encourage broad distribution of the tsunami warning information and evacuation plans in the facilities, in the transient lodging facilities and other locations where that might be frequented by visitors to the area. The -1 amendments further direct the Office of Emergency Management to facilitate the broadest possible distribution using the Internet and existing entities such as transient lodging associations, Chamber of Commerce, and the governmental agencies if monies, in fact, are not available for the distribution of this information. It deletes from the original bill the requirement to post the warning information and evacuation plans at the transient lodging facilities on or after June 1st, 2006, so it eliminates that particular requirement.
It does require, with the amendment, for the Office of Emergency Management to adopt rules to implement this measure by March 1st, 2006. Authorizes OEM and Ogami to seek and accept gifts, grants, and donations from any source to accomplish this task. It would, in fact, delete the emergency clause and prescribe as an effective date the 91st date after sine die. We have received no revenue impact, and this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I'd move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 557.
Senator Starr moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 557. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Chair?
Yes.
Move Senate Bill 557 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Is that where it's supposed to go? Okay. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 557 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. And I'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 557. And Senator Westlin is here to answer questions, so we will open our work session on Senate Bill 402. Your question, Senator Verger.
For the record, Senator Ben Westlin, District 27.
Thank you. Senator Westland, why wouldn't the Water District file a lien against delinquent accounts?
That is an option that is always possible. It's possible today. What I'm concerned about with this bill is, or trying to achieve with this bill, is smaller water districts where cash flow is an issue, being able to certify to the counties with the dash twos, which I think, I don't know if those have been presented, which allows an at-cost appropriation for the county to help collect these monies. That is always an option. It's a debt that's owed, but as is many times the case with utilities, sometimes they don't get paid. If you're talking large municipal water districts, I am not concerned. But in smaller rural areas, rural water districts, I am concerned about cash flow for some of the operations of small water districts.
Another question, Senator Verger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And how would the small water districts collect?
They would, the certification to the county, it would then appear on their property tax bill.
Okay, so it would just be paid through the assessor.
Correct.
Senator George, you have a question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there was a concern, Senator, there was a concern earlier relative to these charges that were incurred by a renter being put on the back of a landowner. Now, here we have a landowner who may just be right up against being able to make that payment to the taxes and now have an addition on top. Tell me, do you think that's a possibility that could occur?
Well, I do think that's a possibility. I mean, it you can go to the consumer side, if you will. Sometimes money's short at the end of the month. I think that's a legitimate concern. I mean, do you have the money to be able to afford where you live at the time? Sometimes people do, sometimes they don't.
Right.
Another question, Senator George?
Well, I know last time we took away all of the incentives that were available to do this, but, you know, many, many times this is really critical for people to make that payment on time for their property taxes and be able to get, you know, a little reduction because it's not running that close. And I'm a little bit concerned about that, about it being, you know, levied and placed here on their property tax.
Other comments or questions?
Let me just real quick.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westlin, can you just, in a nutshell, remind this senator what was the impetus for this bill? What was the issue that...
I'm concerned primarily with small rural water districts that experience cash flow in terms of operating the district. And so I'm trying to facilitate payment to those small districts through making another collection means available. This does not preclude any currently statutorily allowed collection means. But it does ensure that they do get paid eventually. That's the purpose of this bill.
We are in work session. I'm comfortable with what's trying to be accomplished here. As I understand it, Senator George isn't comfortable.
I was just about to take this down because if you get removed, I'm probably already gone. We're only no votes today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I am very happy to accept the wisdom of the committee on this bill, whichever way they decide.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, Mr. Chair, I will jump off here and move the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 402.
Senator Starr moves dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 402. Thank you very much for doing that, Senator Starr. Is there an objection? Senator George is objecting with one tiny finger. So noted.
And a toe.
And a toe.
Yeah, big toe.
Is there... Okay, so even though he has objected, they are approved.
And Mr. Chair, I will move the bill, Senate Bill 402, as amended to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Or does it go to revenue?
Oh, does it have to go to revenue?
I thought it had to go to the floor, but...
It does have a pretty hefty revenue.
Subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
402. Tell me what it's got, please.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not seeing any subsequent referral that was by prior reference on this measure. And we certainly do have a big plus in the revenue estimate.
There's a plus.
But I don't...
Wish we had more of those.
Yeah. So...
That's a happy circumstance when money comes in.
Well, but it should be a revenue-neutral bill.
Doesn't this just provide... I mean, the money gets shifted from the tax assessor to the utility.
Yeah, it's revenue-neutral.
Consumer
should go to the... How's the money?
$55. It's paid to the county. It goes back to the...
Yeah. It's a bill. It's owed. So it's... Yeah, it's not... It should go to the floor.
The revenues in this bill are not the $5 charges, charge $5 fees. The revenues are the actual delinquent water payment.
Right.
Correct. So the $50,000 is the $5 processing fee.
Yeah, that's right. To the floor?
Well, wait a minute. Is this Senator Westland's bill?
If it's Senator Westland's bill, you got a problem?
And things are going so great with Senator George.
It is Senator Westland's bill. I can't send that to the floor.
What do you mean? I've already gotten myself fired as chair this afternoon. What else do you want to do?
Okay. Well, my notes from 2-8 indicated he had a dash 1 amendment, and he gave it to us. Now we have a dash 2. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we went through it. It's hand engrossed in your packet. Okay. Or in your stack.
Okay. Oh, and you had a concern about low-income Oregonians. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
If it's in my notes, you said it.
Thanks a lot.
Consequences to low-income Oregonians, and the answer was you have 4 years before collection begins. So.
Not now.
That's enough for me, especially at 5:40 in the afternoon.
Yeah, okay.
We were in the process. Without you, we had already adopted the dash 2 amendments.
Oh.
We are...
There's a motion on the floor.
The motion... I'm trying to clarify this motion because we talked about Ways and Means and revenue and everything else, but it is a motion to send Senate Bill 402 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That's the motion, clearly. Is there any objection?
Senator George.
Oh, Senator George has an objection, so we have one objection.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
The counties had objected to this last time. How are the counties on this now?
I believe we took care of the county's objections with the dash twos, which have been amended into the bill.
Okay.
Yes. And Gil is not. Gilberdale's not.
And yes. Gil is nodding.
And Gil is nodding because it was Gil who testified before. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
So, there is one objection, but the bill does carry. Sub-ordered Senate Bill 402 as amended goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the very least that he can do for us is carry the bill. Can't you, Senator Westland?
Thank you, committee.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for coming and explaining all the things that you need to. And in carrying your bill, would you please take care of Senator George's fingers and toes?
He did. He just did.
Co-care. Okay.
Yes.
Right on.
Is Senator George still voting no? Have you voted yes on anything?
Yes, I
have. Oh, he's voted yes on significant stuff today, yes.
Okay.
You just have missed it. We are now done with Senate Bill 402. I'm closing that hearing, and I'm opening a hearing on Senate Bill 562.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 562 directs the Office of Emergency Management to develop and operate a statewide first responder building mapping information system. We had before us both Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments define first responder as an individual who, as a regular function of their employment or in a voluntary capacity as an emergency service worker, provides initial response to the scene of an emergency. It deletes the original definitions in the bill for emergency and for first responder, and adds Section 1, directs it to be made part of ORS Chapter 401. The Dash 2 amendments, which do not conflict with each other here, adds schools to the first responder building mapping information system requirements so that schools would also be mapped. It defines school as a school operated by a school district or a public charter school, and defines school building as any building used by the district or the charter school to provide educational services. We have a no revenue impact, and this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I have a note from League of Oregon Cities on
Senate
Bill 562. They are neutral on the bill, but they thought that we should know that the public safety people don't see a need for Senate Bill 562. They believe it would peel dollars away from Homeland Security grants.
Yeah, we heard that in testimony last time.
Toward the public safety training and equipment, and additionally the mapping requirements aren't viewed by locals as needed or particularly helpful.
I remember hearing that testimony when we heard this bill before. Thank you for sharing that again and bringing that to our attention. This is funny, and this is sarcastic, but this is where I am at this time of night. This is one of those bills that has a huge cost, so you go get grant money. It's a right-to-beg bill. Right? That's what this is. It's a right-to-beg bill. We're not, you know, it's going to cost money, so you can have the right to run out and waste your time chasing money all over the place. I guess my opinion would be I'd like to just move the dash two amendments and give them a right to beg, huh?
One and two.
Dash one and two?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If the committee doesn't want to do that, I'm not going to fight tonight. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, it is getting late, and I'm really concerned because in the Dash 1 amendments it says we're going to delete the colon and we're going to insert first responders. So I just thought we needed to clarify that.
I don't think I followed that.
I would you like to...
You don't want to go there.
No, you don't want to go there.
Deleting the colon.
Oh, I didn't want to go there.
Is that... Never mind.
It was misunderstood.
Yeah, it could be...
If someone's watching out in TV land, they're probably wondering what we are thinking.
I could say so many things. That is so good for a stand-up comic, but I am not going there. I'm showing restraint. I want it on the record that I am showing restraint.
And I think I'm blushing.
You should. Al?
Well, Mr. Chair, when we last heard this bill, we were all, those of us since Senator Starr, who wasn't at that hearing, we all thought the bill was way too huge because it was all state buildings, and we had all indicated that it would be better if they restricted it to schools. So I think that's what Senator Brown has done, which is really what Washington State had done.
Yeah, they showed us the videotape on the schools and how it really did a great thing in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And
but they appropriated like $15 million for the project. And this is, as you say, Mr. Chair, right to beg.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is the revenue on this? It's got to be huge.
Well, but the point is, we're not giving them any revenue. We're allowing them to go out and beg for money for
this.
Oh, I see. That's what I said. It's a right to beg bill.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the OEM's right to beg. Mm-hmm.
And, Mr. Chair, I think... this is all schools, and I here's my comment from the last meeting on March 11th. I think it should be retooled to be just high schools. We're biting off more than we can chew at this time. And now this is all schools, because high schools are sort of perceived as the more dangerous places where children are shot and killed, though it has happened in elementary schools, too. But
yeah. Well...
Well, I...
You know, they can always go out and beg just for the high school.
Yeah.
At this point, under the provisions of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't mind giving them the authorization to go out and beg. It's truly unfortunate, but...
Well, you know, what drives me crazy about this whole public policy is we're, on the one hand, we're saying, this is very important. We should do this. And on the other hand, because it's so important, we're going to give you the right to go out and beg for money to do it. You know, we're not going to appropriate any because we don't have any. You know, it's... the longer I go, the more I'm kind of leaning on the committee to give me their wisdom. What do you want to do with this bill?
Yes. I know it is. That's why I'm prepared to move it, Mr. Chair.
You want to move?
I haven't heard from the rest of the committee. That's Senator Starr.
You're not prepared to move it.
Well, it's a great idea, and it's nice to have, and so forth. But
okay,
this creates a mapping information system.
I understand.
And that is going to be very expensive.
Senator George, what's your wishes at this point?
I'm moving their way.
Huh?
I'm moving their way.
Moving there. Who's way?
Yeah. Could be very complex. I mean, if it was limited to...
Senator Starr.
We should be looking at programs to cut, not creating new ones in this budget environment. Not to say anything, okay. This is a bad thing, but we're faced with...
At this moment, I'm just going to close the hearing. Obviously, I have a constitutional problem with moving this one forward, so I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 562. Who knows? Given the miracles of how we do things around here, we might be allowed to address this one later. It is so hard to tell.
Senator Brown.
Senator Brown.
Can I add some enlightenment?
Yes, I'd love to have. I will reopen this hearing on Senate Bill 562. Not hearing, work session. Go ahead.
This is on the emergency mapping bill.
Right.
My reason for introducing this bill was because of my concerns about school safety in times of crisis. The amendments reduce it to mapping for schools only, substantially reducing the scope and nature of the bill.
Right.
I think particularly what just happened in Red Lake, Minnesota, that we should be extremely concerned about the safety of our students in schools, and this is one tool that law enforcement will have in terms of enforcing that safety. I would really ask for your support in sending it to Ways and Means. I understand that there's a fiscal. We can work that out in the Ways and Means process.
Okay. You've had my support. I was ready to vote for it. So far, you got 2 out of 5. Is there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody want to switch their vote here?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what we were talking about was the fact that there is no money there for a full mapping system through the Oregon Emergency Management people at the central level. Now, if we wanted to go to where local people had to provide their maps for their schools, but this is through the state, not through the local. Isn't that right, Senator Brown?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, this basically would allow the local communities to access federal grants and dollars. And I believe that's a more appropriate conversation for the Ways and Means Committee besides. But this would allow school district, local communities to access federal dollars.
You're familiar, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You're familiar with the League of Oregon Cities position that it would take, the local people felt it would take away from their ability to get Homeland Security grants?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, this would not take away anyone's from anything. It would allow people to access dollars that they wouldn't right now have the authority to have.
Okay.
Hans,
yeah.
Go ahead.
You want to help me out there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, my understanding of these amendments is it would clarify the intent of the bill to narrow the scope to only schools and therefore allow OEM, Office of Emergency Management, to apply for grants that were school-specific and not necessarily Homeland Security money.
Okay. Okay, that was good. Thank you for that response. I'm glad to hear that.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So the intent would be to use federal funds to fund this, not necessarily state general fund dollars.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that's correct.
You made it your way to our committee room.
I saw her come galloping through the door. Wasn't that amazing?
Well, Mr. Chair, if it's going to be federal funds and they want to apply for them, limited to schools, then...
Okay.
That's a different
story. Thank you for getting here.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm so glad you're here. Now that we've... Let's see.
Mr. Chair, we did have a very good presentation on this program in Washington State, and I remember getting information on it before the session began, thinking it was a good program.
And I was very impressed with the video that we saw. That was great.
Senator Stop. Brown's point about Red Lake, Minnesota is very well taken. Again, that was a high school, and so if they find when they're out searching for federal funds they can't find that many, that may be where they want to start with first is with high schools. But I'll leave that to the proponents. I think this is appropriate to move this bill with the dash one and the dash two. So
did we adopt the dash one?
No, we haven't adopted anything yet. So I'll make a motion, since Senator George is a no, to move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 562.
Senator Walker moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 562. Is there an objection? Not to the dash one. Okay, there's no objection to the dash ones, so ordered.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 562.
Senator Walker moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 562. Is there any objection to the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 562? Seeing none, so ordered.
Great. My next motion is to move Senate Bill 562 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 562 as amended to Ways and Means. Is there any objection to that? There's no objection. Gosh. So ordered. And we're closing the hearing on Senate Bill 562. Thank you for coming to the rescue of your bill.
Thank you,
Senator Walker. I'm opening a hearing on Senate Bill 589. This is a work session on 589. I'm sorry, I'm using that word hearing because I'm getting tired. Don't know why. I've only been in committee since 7 a.m. this morning. In case you're tired out there, I started at 7. This is my fourth hearing today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. Senate Bill 589 requires OLCC to approve training programs for persons employed by off-premises sale licensees. It provides that the licensee may require the employee to complete the training program if the licensee reimburses the employee for fees charged by the program. It provides that it is unlawful, it is an unlawful employment practice for the licensee to discharge, demote, suspend, or otherwise discriminate against an employee for making a sale to a minor if the employee has not in fact completed the training program. We have a no revenue impact, and you have now received the fiscal statement on the measure. So please review the fiscal statement. The main feature of the fiscal statement is that OLCC estimates that there would be an increased participation in their responsible vendor program that would require an additional two positions and to handle the workload increase on the training programs. The increase in expenses will result in a decrease in revenue distributions to the general fund by $54,873 in 05-07 and a reduction in revenue to local governments of $43,115 again in the 05-07 biennium. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Judith. We heard this bill on the 1st of March, if I have got that right.
And the 15th, Mr. Chair.
And my question is, when we heard this bill originally, did OLCC support this bill?
My notes, Mr. Chair, just indicate John Steubenvall testified. I don't have anything about what he testified about.
Judith, do you recall anything or have any notes? Is there anybody here that can remind me? I mean, tell you what I'm getting at. If they didn't like this bill for some reason, I have record that AFL-CIO liked it and other people liked the bill because it's a good idea. But if somebody was frustrated because it was going to create more work, all you got to do is come up with the fiscal that makes it cost a couple bucks and it'll go to Ways and Means and die. And so, you know, that's kind of behind my thinking here. Is there anyone here as an advocate for this that wants to make a comment?
Yeah. The responsible vendor program.
I know.
The OLCC is very much in favor vendor program.
I know they are, but given constrained resources, given constrained staff, given that they're probably going through their own set of budget cuts and reduction in staff, can they be asked to do more at this point in time? And that was my question.
Yeah. It seems to me, I remember, didn't they testify about trying to, or maybe they didn't, it's about grocery store clerks that they're tired of people selling to minors. And
right.
So that was part of it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Well, I think one of the big policy issues in this bill is the new unlawful employment practice that it creates. And I think that we heard from the vendors, I mean the off-premises dealers that sell this stuff, that they've instituted this zero tolerance, and that particular policy choice in this would undermine, you know, what's been years of drilling into these stores that employees to check ID, and that was, from my recollection of the hearing, a really important policy change that this bill would institute.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, and I certainly respect that view. What I took away from it was the training kind of teaches the checker what to look for in a fake ID and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The training has value. And so if you go through the training, you get one dispensation in life or something like that. And the grocers, the owners, didn't like that because they've spent so much time doing what you said, Senator Starr. You know, drilling it, it's one strike, you're out.
Well, it's a zero tolerance.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You know, you got to check, you got to make sure.
Right. So the question is the training
is the carrot for the training the fact that you end up with one mistake and you still get to keep your job? Or, you know, I mean, I think what the unions like about it is that it is training. I mean, United Food and Commercial Workers and others had their testimony and talked about the need for more training and so on. So what do you want to do with the bill, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wish I had notes about what John testified about. I must have stepped out of the room. I usually write a note that I'd stepped out, but I didn't write that. The only testimony in opposition was from Mr. Linden, and Senator Starr expressed what that testimony was about.
Right.
And the testimony we had from Steve Lanning at our last hearing was that there were other bills in the building, that this bill was amenable to be amended. I don't see an amendment here. We all like the bill, at least what I could understand. I think Senator Verger made the comment at one of these hearings that sometimes things here defy all common sense because the responsible vendor program is really a good thing. I'm interested in giving these people an opportunity to get some training. I just think it's unfair that it's one strike, you're out, and I'm prepared to move the bill.
I like the bill because I think the legislature ought to do everything it can to reduce alcohol and tobacco use by minors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the bill gets at that. I understand the zero tolerance perspective, but sometimes these things end up at cross purposes to one another, and if we go with that, then I honestly believe that we won't be doing all we can do through training these people to actually reduce alcohol and tobacco abuse. At least that's what we all want to do. Go ahead, Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I think that it's naive to believe that the grocery stores don't train their folks when they hire them. Don't give them some sort of, you know.
Are they training them enough, though? Are they training them with the best of technology?
I guess that's just a philosophy that you know. Here we are, the legislature. Let's tell you how to do how to run your store, how you do your business. I think that we undermined. We actually, if we were to pass this bill, we're at cross purposes with what you just said. I don't think we preclude sale of these products to minors. I think that we give folks one shot. They can sell them to minors one time. You're not going to get fired. I think that in my mind, it goes backwards in the sale of these products to minors. And I think that it's crazy for with the liability that's at stake for these grocery stores not to train their folks to identify when somebody is a minor. I think it would be absurd for us to think that they're not out there making sure that their employees are well trained so that they're not held liable in the case that they do sell something to a minor. That's the big hammer. That's the big hammer hanging over these grocery store heads. So this is a bill that we have to has to go to Ways and Means and ultimately have to find some funding. You know, I think you got 3 votes to send it down there, perhaps, and send it down to Ways and Means. Maybe you have 4. See how it fares. And
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, the testimony from Mr. Linden on the 1st of March was, please send this bill to Ways and Means. So I say we send it to Ways and Means and comply with that request.
Mr. Chair, I've always been disappointed that we didn't have more people in the responsible vendor program. You know, it's a protection for people that have bars, that if their people are trained and anything happens, they get a little bit of a break for having people trained. And yet, we don't have we certainly don't have anywhere near 100% like you'd think. And it's been a very slow process in getting people to come into that. I think it's the tip of the iceberg to get minors not to drink. I think we have to teach parents that they shouldn't go and buy liquor at the stores and have parties for 16-year-olds in their home either. But I think the training thing is necessary, and the problem is you can't discharge people if they haven't had any training. And I can go back to the groceries, grocery store. I imagine they do some training. I don't know if there's anybody here that could speak to that, but I would think that the grocery store owners do some training about ID and checking ID.
At least two folks in the back of the room that could tell us.
Yeah, I think the OLCC program goes further than that. I think it's a more extensive program.
Do we see a willingness for them to come up and explain that?
No, I just want to move the bill. It's 10 after 6, and I'm hungry, and I'd like to take a break. I mean, does anybody else need any further explanation? We've debated this bill twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, do you want to recess right now?
I'd just like to move it and move the agenda. But if someone else wants to hear more testimony on it, okay.
Senator Verger, back to you then.
Well, is there a motion?
It's fine with me. Yeah. Whatever you want
to make a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion then. Have we got amendments on this bill?
No.
Okay, I'll make a motion then, Mr. Vice Chair, to move Senate Bill 589. This does not have a referral to Ways and Means.
Right.
We need to ask the Senate President too. So what's my motion going to be, Ms. Callie?
Your motion would be to move 589 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and recommend referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Thank you. Where'd this come from? Okay, I moved Senate Bill 589 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, with a recommendation also that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Without objection?
I didn't know anything.
So moved.
Okay.
Madam Secretary, do I have the authority to adjourn this committee for a certain amount, recess for a certain amount of time, or do we want to wait?
That would be at the committee's prerogative. We have only four bills left in work session, so if you'd like to keep going, we could keep going, or come back after a dinner break, whatever your pleasure.
I need to close that work session, right? I need to close the work session on Senate Bill 589, and we're going to open on what?
690.
And I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 690.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Member. Senate Bill 690 permits payment of supplemental unemployment benefits to dislocated workers whose unemployment is due to release from military duty related to deployment in the Oregon National Guard or military reserves in Afghanistan or Iraq. It extends eligibility of dislocated workers for supplemental benefits beyond June 30th, 2005. You do have before you the -1 amendments, which modifies eligibility requirements such that lack of employment resulted from the workers, in fact, return to service. The original bill said release from service. Here we're talking about that the unemployment is due to the workers' return to service in the Oregon National Guard or military reserve forces following a change in status from serving under Title 32 to serving under Title 10 at a time designated by executive order as a period of combatant activities. It further, the -1 amendments further define eligible dislocated workers to include those returned to service in the Oregon National Guard or military reserves following that active duty service set forth, and the -1 amendments would further declare an emergency effective on passage. We have a no revenue on this measure. I must tell you that we don't have a fiscal on the measure yet, and it currently does not have a subsequent referral. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee.
Move the -1 amendments to whatever the bill is, 690.
Uh-huh.
Senate Bill 690.
Senator Starr has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 690. Is there any further discussion? Without objection?
No, this bill doesn't have, we don't have a fiscal, we don't have any idea what it would be, we don't expect it. Oh, we have.
I can tell you what we sent to the legislative fiscal office.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tamara Brickman, the legislative coordinator for the Employment Department.
and we sent a fiscal statement to legislative fiscal indicating this has no fiscal impact on the Employment Department's budget.
Perfect.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 690 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 690 as amended with dash 1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Without objection? Seeing none? So moved. I'm going to close the Senate hearing on Senate Bill 690. And we're going to open on 706? No? 706. Okay, open up a work session on Senate Bill 706.
Some of the bills here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We just got this afternoon dash 4 amendments, which I did manage to get hand engrossed, even though I apologize it doesn't say hand engrossed on the right hand corner, but the hand engrossed version that you have at your seat at the desk was in fact it's coming around now, the hand engrossed version of the dash 4 amendments. Let's see, we have a no revenue impact. Excuse me, it's my understanding that these are also all federal funds so that it will not end up having a fiscal impact. And Commissioner Gardner is here to talk about one conceptual amendment, a word change on page 4 that he's worked out with the cities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill, as you recall, just simply gets us substantially equivalent with federal law on discrimination, which would allow the Bureau of Labor and Industries to go into contract with Housing and Urban Development to do enforcement on discrimination in the state of Oregon. Our laws have to be substantially equivalent in order for that to happen. The amendment the committee administrator mentioned is on page 4, lines 5 and 12, and it is simply changing the word use to access, and that's an amendment worked out with the cities. And with that and the dash 4 amendments, that would get our law substantial equivalent. This bill passed out of the Senate last session on a nearly unanimous vote and got tied up in the at the end of session in conference committee.
Which line again and 4?
Line 5 and line 12. Okay. Just simply the word use to access.
He's working on the dash 4 amendments.
It's on the dash 4 amendments, page 4.
Well, what do we, question that. That's what we're referring to as dash 4A. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I see.
So just for clarification of the record, the conceptual amendment that the committee is being asked to consider is on the Senate Bill 706-4 amendments, page 4, in line 5, and in line 12, where you see the word use, it would be access, would replace the word use in those lines.
So we need to move
Mr.
Well, we've got a conceptual amendment. I don't do those in my committee. So.
Can I ask a question, Judith? The issue that the realtors had with the original bill was this facially neutral portion. And as I read the hand-engrossed version of the bill, those sections are deleted. Is that correct? And is it the understanding that the realtors are now okay with this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, yes. We worked those amendments out with the realtors, and that was language left over from someone else's bill last session that got mixed up in there that was not necessary for our purposes for getting substantially equivalent. We were very happily removed those.
Okay, Matt, Mr. Chair, I would move that we conceptually amend the dash 4 amendments. By on page 4 of the dash 4s, strike the word use on lines 5 and lines 12 and insert the word access.
Any discussion?
Well,
that's why I'm waiting for Senator Walker. Senator Walker, do you have anything to
I don't like doing conceptual amendments because they create problems, but I'm not going to stand in the way. If you guys want to do it, fine.
I was hoping, I was actually delaying for the real chair to get here. Because this is the second time we've done it today.
Yeah, it's just bad business, but, you know, we're kind of stuck.
Okay, we have an emotion. Yeah. We have a motion here.
I think so.
If I could just add, maybe emotion was a better word. Do we have kind of a consensus of the committee before I ask for objections?
Yeah, I'll go along with it. It'll be a dash five, and if it comes back to committee, I can say I told you so. So we'll go with it.
All right, shall we refer to this as dash five then, or the conceptual amendment?
No.
We're conceptually amended to dash
four. Conceptual amendment. Okay, and that's all we're dealing with. Does everyone understand that?
All right.
Without objection to do that conceptual amendment? Well, that was a tap of the gavel. Here we go again.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, oh, five is requested. And does that reflect it accurately?
What you said would be
accurate. Well, we don't have it. It's right. 6:15. Okay. We're gonna cruise ahead. If it's okay.
Cruising right along.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 706 as conceptually amended.
Okay. Any further discussion? Without objection. So moved.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 706 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 706 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, there's just one thing I don't quite understand, and it talks about architectural barriers as a main focus of the bill, but in the relating clause it doesn't mention it. Would there be some reason for that?
Do we have an answer?
Do we have an answer to that?
I'm sorry, Senator, could you repeat?
In the bill, one of the main focuses is architectural barriers in multifamily housing, and yet in the relating clause, it really just talks about discrimination and the investigation after the report to the Bureau of Labor, and that seemed to me to be kind of odd that it wouldn't have architectural barriers in the relating clause.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, it seems odd to me to Annette Talbot, Deputy Labor Commissioner, for the record, but one aspect of the Federal Fair Housing Act is a requirement that buildings be designed and constructed, multifamily dwellings, in a way that has accessibility for handicapped or disabled
Correct.
Individuals. So in order to be substantially equivalent, we have to include that as in the definition of housing discrimination, just like it is in the federal law.
Okay.
So it's one very small aspect of housing discrimination. We understand they get one complaint a year now under HUD, so it's a very, very small aspect.
Okay.
The rest is more of a civil rights issue regarding housing discrimination, as we all generally understand it.
Yeah, thank you, Annette, for answering that.
Okay. Any further question? We have a motion before us to move 706 as amended to the floor. Okay, seeing none, without objection. So moved. Close the work.
Is Senator Carter going to carry?
Oh yes,
that?
I haven't been even assigning carriers because I'm.
Yeah, it's Senator Carter's bill.
Okay.
That would be appropriate, Mr.
All right. Senator Carter then has been selected for Senator 706.
And then
go ahead.
On 690, the carrier.
Is that Metzger's bill?
Senator Courtney and Senator Metzger.
Mm-hmm. Who's the carrier? Okay. Who's the carrier?
We didn't sign it. That's
690.
Would you like to carry it?
You want to do it?
Yeah, I'll carry it.
Okay. We don't need to reopen to do that.
No.
Okay.
No.
Good.
Okay,
then.
Yeah, I need some protein soon, so how many more bills have we got?
All right, I need to close the work session on Senate Bill 706.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, then we're 8:17?
Correct. And, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that this will actually be the last bill of our day because 929 is already reposted on our Thursday agenda, and the sponsor asks that 964 be set over till Thursday. So 8:17 will bring us to our last bill of today.
Okay, I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 817.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair members. Senate Bill 817 directs the Department of State Police to adopt rules to provide for a communications chain of command in which county emergency program managers facilitate the flow of information between the department and the emergency service providers within the county. It directs the department to adopt rules containing guidelines or recommendations for hardware and software purchases to facilitate the exchange of that information. We have before us, just this afternoon came out the Dash 1 amendments from Senator Metzger. And
for the record, Ken Murphy, I'm the Director of Emergency Management, just here to facilitate any questions, because when I briefed this in Corvallis at our last committee hearing, we talked about pretty much changing this entire complexity of the bill.
So you're supportive of Dash 1?
Yes, sir.
Wait, Mr. Chair, last time in Corvallis we talked about duct tape and buying things off the Internet. That was another interesting conversation.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
as I look at the Dash 1s, I notice that there's blanks.
Yeah.
There's blanks in that amendment.
There's blanks in
it. Does this bill need to go someplace to have those blanks filled in besides...
There are blanks.
Here?
Right.
Dollar signs and blanks.
Thank you, Senator.
Would you like to fill it in with a number?
Yeah.
Where's the chair when we need him?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the blanks are, you know, right now most of this will probably be funded through Homeland Security because a good majority of their efforts are based upon improving communications infrastructure and at all levels of government and the private sector. So a majority of that's coming from Homeland Security.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Starr.
I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 817.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 817. Is there any further questions or comments relative to the Dash 1? Okay, without objection. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 817 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. The recommendation is that we send Senate Bill 817 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means without objection. So moved.
Like an important piece of business.
And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 817, and we are adjourned.
Yep.
Thank you very much.